We got a great big convoy up in Canada, and American truckers are joining with Canadian truckers protesting vaccine mandates. Get this. They're estimating 50,000 truckers. That sounds crazy to me. That can't be right. But they're saying it stretches nearly 50 miles, this trucker convoy in protest. And Trudeau, shaking in his boots, said, it's just a small fringe minority. Are you kidding? This is massive. This story is getting really, really big. So we're going to get into this. We got a bunch of other stories. Evangeline Lilly, star of Ant-Man and the Wasp, went down. She's a Hollywood celebrity, went to the D.C. anti-mandate protest, publicly endorsed the message, getting roasted. But wow, bravo. I'm really surprised to hear that someone out of Hollywood is doing the right thing. Which brings us to Dan Bongino. He's getting censored. His YouTube channel has been deleted. And we got Joe Rogan in the news again. And I think the story is escalated now to something totally different. The amount of hit pieces that just came out about Joe. I mean, we talk about him quite a bit. And it's always kind of like, oh, look at that. They're talking about Joe Rogan again. Now it's like CNN, The Verge, Independent. Outlets across the board are writing different crazy stories. They first tried going for the nuclear option. You know, we got a list of doctors. That didn't work. Now they're trying the Marvel Jericho missile method, if you're familiar with Iron Man. They're just layering all these different hit pieces. And it says something really interesting that I think is actually good news. Joe has set the news cycle. He controls it now. Every time they try and go after him for what he, what someone else says, what one of his guests says, Joe owns the news cycle. And if they keep playing into this, they're done. The media is digging their own grave. Mm-hmm. So we'll get into all this stuff. Joining us today to talk about all of this is Carrie Sheffield. Do you want to introduce yourself?
Hey, Tim. What camera do I look at? I'm
that
sorry.
One.
Okay. There's so many. Hey, everybody. I'm Carrie Sheffield. I am a senior policy analyst with the Independent Women's Forum. We believe that all issues are women's issues. We are not pigeonholed as women. And we believe in limited government. We believe in freedom. And we believe that people should be able to make their own choices about their lives. I mean, these are just basic American concepts.
Oh, yeah. There's a really interesting story we might be able to get into about this app called Giggle. Have you heard about it?
No.
It's a female-only app that uses facial recognition to determine if you're female. And it's caused a huge uproar in the LGBTQ community because facial recognition doesn't care about what you identify as. So maybe we'll get into that later on, though. But
that is very interesting.
Yeah, it is. It is. It will be interesting philosophically and scientifically. We have Seamus.
Good to be here. Thank you for having me back again.
Who are you?
I am the creator of Freedom Tunes. If you want to check out my YouTube channel, I do political cartoons as well as educational cartoons and political commentary. Every now and again, Tim begs me. He says, Seamus, come onto my podcast. Please.
Seamus thinks he's so famous that he doesn't need to explain what he does.
That's everybody knows who
incorrect.
I am.
See, you're making assumptions. I just figured no one's going to care who I am.
Oh, okay. Well.
It's coming from a place of humility.
All right. Well, I agree. Ian.
Thank you, buddy.
I don't know if this is going to play on camera. Oh my gosh. Tim got me this beautiful new beanie.
He was trying to gag you.
I think there was more parts awesome. To it, but I didn't.
I think you have.
You look
on.
Like
Ian,
the
Ian.
Kid on the Christmas story.
No, I think
Ralphie.
I'm a knight from the Middle Ages.
Well, it also has
everyone.
The glasses kind of ruined it. They're fogging up.
There's a beard you're supposed to attach to it.
Oh, cool. The full set.
Oh, nice.
Oh, my gosh.
He's
what's up, everybody? Ian Crossland over here. I want you to follow me on iancrossland.net.
Is it Ian? We can't tell.
This isn't going to work as
oh,
is.
Man.
But
I thought you were wearing a mask.
No. Awesome. Thanks, Tim.
That beard has a mouth hole. You're supposed to attach it to the hat.
I know.
You should have.
It's going well.
You should have prepared for this.
Yeah, that's my MO. Welcome.
Wardrobe malfunction.
Hey. Hi. Looking forward to the conversation. Let's get down and dirty. 50,000 truckers, man. That's
yeah,
nice.
Yeah, it's a lot.
Is that real? Let's find out.
Yeah, we're going to find out. I'm always happy when I have ladies on, especially ladies from the IWF. So we're going to have a great conversation today and we can get into it.
Before we get started, head over to timcast.com. Become a member to help support all of the work we do here. We are principally funded by memberships. It is what makes everything operate. It employs our journalists. It allows this show to continue. And as a member, you'll get access to exclusive members-only segments of this podcast. We will have a special members-only segment for you guys up around 11 or so p.m. after the show. They're usually around a half an hour long. You don't want to miss them. They're good fun. We have a lot of really awesome people. And you could look back at the entire library with people like Andrew Torba and Steve Bannon and Alex Jones and Marjorie Taylor Greene. It's all really, really good fun. So help support our work over at TimCast.com. But don't forget to smash that like button right now. Subscribe to this channel. Share the show with your friends. That's the marketing power of the grassroots effort. We can't compete with all these big companies, but if you guys just take 10 seconds to go copy, paste, boom. If everyone did that, we'd be crushing the mainstream media. But now let's get into that big story. This is from the Daily Mail. American truckers join Canada's Freedom Convoy protesting vaccine mandate as rigs stretch for 45 miles. Trudeau plays it down and calls protesters a small fringe minority. Look at this. With 50,000 truckers driving from Vancouver, the Freedom Convoy 2022 is demanding that their government abolish vaccine passports. They say as many as 32,000 or about 20% of truckers are not vaccinated. Now, there's so much craziness to this story. Aside from the fact this line is massive, GoFundMe, what did they raise, like $5 million already? Is that it?
Well, that's what I heard yesterday, that they had canceled a $5 million.
Froze it.
Okay.
Yeah, I think they released it.
Oh.
This is big. It's amazing because we had that big D.C. protest, you know, this past weekend. Robert Malone went on Joe Rogan's podcast and mentioned, we're going to go to D.C. and protest. Wasn't that big. I think Luke was down there and he said maybe 10, 20,000 people. And I was like, well, you know. But now we're getting 50,000 truckers stretching 45 to 50 miles.
It looks like GoFundMe's releasing 1 million of the 5 million for some reason. Not all 5 million.
Mm. I can't understand why they would even use GoFundMe.
Yeah. No, I don't know why you would at this point. It's interesting because this article that we were all looking at points out that the longest convoy prior to that was 5 miles long.
This is 45.
And you have Justin Trudeau saying this is a small fringe protest because this is what they do anytime they want to turn public perception against the popular movement. They either claim it's not large or they ignore it. They do it at the March for Life every single year, which is part of why I went there this year to cover it because there were tens of thousands of people there, but they always make it sound like it's a no-show event.
How many people do you think were down there at the...
I couldn't estimate, but it was tens of thousands, definitely.
Well, and it wasn't just in D.C., too. It's happening all over the country.
Yeah, very true.
Yeah.
March for capitals. Life?
March for Life is national,
Yeah. Well, vaccine passports.
This is, I've been waiting for the United States, for Americans and Canadians to unify in some way against against government overreach. Just Americans and other you know, people from around the world, Australians.
What is this going to mean for our food and stuff? You know, because are these guys effectively not working by doing this? There's already a trucker shortage.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I was sort of talking about this yesterday, but the idea that we could afford to lose 20% of our truckers across any border if the economy was doing well would be ludicrous. With things as bad as they are, it's insane to even have Justin Trudeau or any civil authority ignore this, pretend as if it's not a big deal, and try to force their demands onto the truckers. He either doesn't realize the leverage that they have, or more likely, he realizes they do have leverage, but he doesn't care because he's not going to get hurt when the shelves aren't stocked. You are.
What I don't get is why are they targeting truckers specifically? Because most of your time, you're alone in your cabin.
Yeah.
You're not, I mean, okay, maybe you're at the Flying J to pick up some snacks. Mm-hmm. Why not the motorists in the car, the four-wheelers, you know?
Agreed.
Yeah. Like, why truckers? The people whom we rely on. I don't understand that. And then I don't understand Omicron, I think, changed the calculus for everything. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just breakthrough cases are everywhere. So whether you are vaccinated or not at this point, it is irrelevant to whether you will get Omicron.
If you look at all of this through the lens of public health, you will be confused the whole time.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
If you look at this through the lens of someone trying to destroy economies, mm-hmm. everything makes sense.
Exactly.
Why would Cuomo willfully kill people? Andrew Cuomo in New York was like, I'm going to put sick people in nursing homes and they'll die. And he was warned that would happen. Now, why would he do that if he was trying to save lives? That literally makes no sense. The problem
is because he got a lot of money from the hospital associations.
To send
campaign donations to his campaign.
Yeah, but
they, because they were pressuring him because they wanted the money.
Right. No, but he put him in nursing homes.
Well, the administrators of both the hospitals and the nursing homes.
The nursing homes said, give us sick people.
They wanted the money.
Mm-hmm. Is that it?
From
all these people.
Yeah. But he wanted the campaign. He was under their pressure.
The nursing home said, give us more people to make us money.
As I understand it, that's what they want. They wanted the people there.
Well, then he killed people for money.
Well, also, I think a lot of this makes more sense if you look at it through the lens of these people being control freaks who demand our compliance. So you asked why go after truckers. I think part of the reason is because they just need to see people bend the knee. I think that's a huge reason why these mandates are being pushed on people. They don't want you making your own medical decisions. They want to make those decisions for you. I firmly believe that. And I think they view it as a challenge I think they view it as a challenge to their authority if people don't take their recommendations and do the things they told them to do, and they don't care who has to suffer when those people are punished. That's what I believe.
That's too simplistic.
I don't think so. I think that these people are control freaks.
Yeah, but control freaks that want something. Mm-hmm. Like, the idea that they're just like, you know what? We have no reason to do this, but we'll do it anyway.
No. All right. So here's the thing. I absolutely believe that there are probably other motives there, but I think once people start standing up and saying no, then the new motivation becomes, well, I need to make sure that they fall in line, because if they can say no to this, they can say no to the other demands I make on them.
I think a lot of this is political. I think there's political strategy behind it.
Definitely.
I think they, the interesting thing is that it spans all these different countries. Mm-hmm. You've got Europe enacting much of the same policies that we enact here, that, you know, Canada is doing. Now, interestingly, we're seeing in Europe a bunch of these countries start to end their lockdowns, mm-hmm. like Denmark, I think the Netherlands, a few others. While some are getting even more strict, I look at this through the lens of a pandemic. None of it makes sense. It's like you're trying to put a puzzle together, but if you've got the wrong picture, the pieces won't go together. Mm-hmm. And if we look at this through the lens of coordinated political manipulation, then it all makes sense. It does. Why go after truckers? They're destroying the economy. Why destroy the economy? I mean, I don't know, man. There's a bunch of different reasons. For one, look at what Bill de Blasio said, that he wants to buy up the buildings in New York City, now that they're worthless because people are fleeing, and turn them into public housing. So there's one good reason to do it.
Yeah.
You go after the truckers, you depress wages, you smash small businesses, you transfer wealth back up to the elites who call themselves the elites in the World Economic Forum. I mean, that looks, you know, plain and simple. Now, I suppose if you want to take it one extra layer deep, we can, you know, listen to Alex Jones talking about an alien intelligence taking over, but that one's a little too far from me.
I can't go there.
Yeah, global elites who are trying to steal money from the working class. Well, that's history.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, that's socialism. That's Marxism. That's human nature to grasp more power. That's just ad infinitum. That's how humans have always been. And we see this in real time right now in Central America. It's just heartbreaking to see that a strong man, strong woman, whatever, dictator, they don't care about the people. It's all about in Cuba. Same thing. That's how it is. If you get power, you're power hungry, you're power drunk. Yeah. Unless you believe that the power rests with the people, then fundamentally, if you fundamentally don't believe that the power rests with the people and that you are better than them, then you're going to keep stealing more power. That's just human nature.
What I find funny about this is the posts and stories where it's like, it's white supremacists. You know, like that's their go-to for everything.
Yeah. Aliens.
As if that's in any way an explanatory narrative here. Like, why don't these people want to get this injection? Oh, they must hate black people. What are you talking about?
A bunch
about?
Of How racists got in their trucks.
Yeah.
It makes no sense. But they did the same thing.
Mention the vaccine hesitancy among black Americans is, I think, in many cases a lot higher than white Americans.
Especially in
so.
New York. Mm-hmm. But they're doing
but again,
the same
that's
thing,
white supremacy because they're trying to scare black people to not get it.
They're doing the same thing right now with March for Life.
Yeah, of course.
That Patriot Front group that no sane person thinks is an actual group.
I know.
Was apparently at the March for Life. And now all these articles pop up where they're like, why white supremacists like the pro-life movement or whatever. And I'm like, I don't understand why they would. That makes no sense.
Yeah, that's absolutely insane. What about Margaret Sanger? She was a white supremacist and she founded Planned Parenthood. So explain that to me.
Or the locations of Planned Parenthood.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
But that's why, that's not an indictment from me personally on Planned Parenthood's choice of locations. The left has their arguments for it. I'm just pointing out, why would a white supremacist be upset with that?
Yeah.
Why would they be like, oh, gee, oh, darn. No, they would probably be in favor of those clinics.
No, in fact, I think Live Action called up a Planned Parenthood and said, I'd like to specifically target a donation to specifically target for black women.
Yes.
And they said, send it on over. And he's like, yeah.
That is wokeness. Cranked up to 11. Yeah. I'm sure you've got some critical race theorist, like woke, you know, Planned Parenthood woman, nurse or whatever. And she's like, that's so nice of you.
Yeah. No, it's true. He asks over the phone. I can't remember if it was Live Action, but I do remember that story.
Or was it Veritas? It might have been.
I don't remember, but I do remember this guy over the phone like, I want to make a donation for people to have abortions. Like, could it go like specifically to like minority? He's like dancing around it a little bit, but he basically says, yeah, could you like make sure this donation goes to getting black babies aborted? And they're like, yes, of course.
Because the way they twist it in their head, and look, I have to put the disclaimer, Independent Women's Forum is neutral on abortion, but yeah. I personally am pro-life. And that's the thing about the right is that we allow for disparate opinion on this. There are almost no pro-life Democrats. They just, for example, tried to book a, you know, Democrats for Life tried to book a meal for during the March for Life at a restaurant. I think Busboys and Poets in D.C. Their reservation was canceled once they found out that these were Democrats for Life. But I am personally pro-life. But
there's actually a lot of Democrats that are pro-life. It's huge.
But they're suppressed by the establishment, and they're you can't fundraise, especially if you're a female Democrat. Good luck getting money.
And I would say they're not particularly pro-life if they're willing to just vote Democrat knowing they're voting against their own interests.
Exactly.
But not to derail the conversation, speaking of truckers, they're doing the same thing. But it's the same old tired playbook. I'm tired of saying it. I'm tired of hearing it. But to be honest, it's getting to a point where now it's comical. It's like, oh, you're doing that thing again? You're claiming the protesters are racists?
Exactly.
Wow. What year is it? Is it 2016? Oh, it's 2022?
Well, and this is
get a new bit.
There was an incredibly insightful article written in 2016, and I can't remember who wrote it, unfortunately. But their whole point was, after the election, they realized that they couldn't go around calling people racist anymore. And it wasn't that they realized that you can't just call people names. They just understood that that term had lost its meaning, so they started saying white supremacist after right. that. And then they started saying white supremacist all the time. And now I think they've moved on to – they're really playing with using like incitement of violence – as their new term.
Or threat to democracy.
Yeah, but it's just the same way of saying the same, a different way of saying the same thing, which is that you're disobedient.
It's Chicken Little. Just running around screaming the sky is falling. Mm-hmm. It's the boy who cried wolf. Mm-hmm. I gotta be honest, I literally don't care.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Someone could be marching around protesting anything, and they would be like, that person's racist. And I'd be like, huh. Mm-hmm. What else is on? I don't care. The words lost any meaning. Meaningless.
Mm-hmm. And speaking of threat to democracy, I just read a really great piece about the actual threat to democracy right now is the Soros-funded DAs who are literally ignoring the will of the people by choosing to pick and choose whatever they feel like prosecuting. These are laws that have been passed by the legislative branch. There's a thing called separation of powers that says the executive branch is supposed to. It's not optional. You can't the DA in New York, for example, can't just unilaterally decide something. These aren't suggestions. So that is the actual threat to democracy. And I'm really glad to see people like my former boss, John Solomon. He's been able to do some great reporting about this and enforcing documents. For example, in Missouri, the prosecutor who was Soros funded in St. Louis, people are starting to wake up.
Let's talk about the narrative breaking. We've got the story from NBC News. Marvel actor Evangeline Lilly shares that she attended anti-vaccine mandate rally. The anti-vaccination mandate rally held Sunday made headlines because of comments from Robert F. Kennedy Jr. comparing policies to the Holocaust. And even after that, Evangeline Lilly was still willing to publicly come out and be like, yo, I was there because I believe in this. Evangeline Lilly, you rock. You are awesome. You did a great job in Ant-Man and Ant-Man and the Wasp. Big fan. And for you to come out now and stand up for what you believe in the face of this psychotic media going after everybody, smearing people, lying about people, that is brave. That is principled. I respect it. And it shows for everybody else, you know, when Hollywood celebrities start coming out and saying, nah, that's good news.
Yep.
The narrative's broken.
Yeah. Also, I mean, of course, you know, Holocaust comparisons between the Holocaust and events where no one is being killed are so tired at this point that even pointing out that they're tired is tired.
Yeah.
People are losing their minds over it, but it's like everyone does it all the time. It happens way more often on the left, but so, so banal at this point. But, you know, I mean, good for her for standing up for the truth and being willing to say, yeah, I was at this mandate. These are my actual values. Because there are a lot of celebrities, I'm sure, who can see through this stuff. I have some faith that there are at least some of them who are capable of it, but they're just not saying anything.
Yeah, it's the government jumped the shark. That's that idea from like a TV show, and the TV show's just gone too far. It's had too many new adoptions of little kids to, you know, whatever. It comes from Happy Days when I think they literally jumped a shark on a motorcycle.
Yes.
Just trying to one-up themselves over and over. It gets so far, they're like, well, the show's jumped the shark. Mm-hmm. The government's jumped the shark. We know it because we've been watching, and we can relate it to 20 years ago or 15 years ago. But young kids that see it aren't going to realize that this is too far, and they might think that it's normal. This is just how government works.
Evangeline Lilly's got 2.2 million followers, and she posted a picture of Vax Democrat for Medical Freedom. She said, I was in D.C. this weekend to support bodily sovereignty while Canadian truckers were rallying for their cross-country peaceful convoy in support of the same thing. Yo, this is epic. I believe nobody should ever be forced to inject their body with anything against their will under threat of violent attack, arrest or detention without trial, loss of employment, homelessness, starvation, loss of education, alienation from loved ones, excommunication from society, under any threat whatsoever. This is not the way. This is not safe. It is not healthy. This is not love. I understand the world is in fear, but I don't believe that answering fear with force will fix our problems. Mm-hmm. I was pro-choice before COVID. I'm still pro-choice today. Bravo, Evangeline Lilly. That was an epic post. And brave, that is, you know what, guys? Stunning and brave.
Indeed, yes. Yes, it is.
It was all based until that last sentence, but, you know, I'm glad she's speaking out about being pro-choice in any capacity. But yeah. I hear what she's saying, and it's great because these are the people who want to spend all of their time claiming that they stand with the working class. And then when you have truckers who are working class and are in many ways, like, quite literally the backbone of the economy, if there's one group you're going to point to and say we can make a solid case that we absolutely need these people, mm-hmm. it's truckers. And so for them to be thrown under the bus and for us to look the other way, especially people on the left who are constantly harping on about like how empathetic they are and how much they care about the working class, is ridiculous. So good for her. I mean, she's doing what they claim they're supposed to do.
Well, and Ian, to your point on jumping the shark and passing the moment, like, I think Biden himself, first of all, let's flash, you know, back in time when the Biden administration used to say, oh yeah, we can't do a mandate. That's just something we can't mm-hmm. do legally. And then lo and behold, they put the mandate in place. Yep. But lo and behold, the Supreme Court says, no, actually, you can't. And now they're repealing their OSHA mandate. So I think even, I mean, the wave has crested as far as the mandates are concerned. And I have to say, this was an anti-mandate rally, which is contrary to what I think it was CNN or MSNBC. I forget what I said. They said it was an anti-vaccine rally. I'm like, no, you obviously don't understand. This is about the mandates.
No, they do. They're just lying.
Of course.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Liars.
They are. They're liars.
Thank you for the correction.
That's exactly what
You're
it
true.
Is.
Yeah.
You know, I'm watching this and we have Marvel references, and what just comes to mind with the mainstream narrative is that scene from the new Spider-Man movie where Doctor Strange is trying to contain the spell, but it's out of control and then it just erupts. Hmm. And I'm like, that is the truth. That is reality. And they're desperately trying to contain it and it just breaks free and then it shatters the multiverse and then, you know, reality comes breaking through. Not in that movie. I don't know. A bunch of weirdos showed up like Spider-Man from other movies. But my point is, the narrative can't be contained. They're trying as hard as they can. Mm-hmm. It's an anti-vax protest of racists and white supremacists. And then Evangeline Lilly is just like, nah.
That's why you got to stay alive, all of you. It's important right now, as hard as things might seem, stay alive because it is shattering and twisting open. It's inevitable.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think there's really cause for hope here. The fact that they have to tie themselves into knots over this. When they have to lie about how large your movement is and how large the protests are, in a lot of ways, you're in good shape. It's a good problem to have. It really is. Because people are waking up to it. Imagine the alternative. Imagine if we had to pretend that our protests were far larger than they were. Whoever has to lie about the numbers is losing.
Trump always was like, huge. My rallies
they were
big.
Huge. His rallies were massive.
So a lot of them were really big, but I mean, you know, when they come out after the inauguration and it wasn't nearly that big, it was big. And then they were like, the biggest ever. It's like, well, if you include streaming numbers, then yes. But everybody's always trying to promote themselves. And I certainly understand why. But the media does the opposite. I remember during Occupy Wall Street, this funny thing happened where a local news station was covering one of the protests, like a peripheral protest in some city. And the camera guy, we actually watched him wait until the end of the protest and then start filming when there was like seven people. And then there were like people were sharing it. Look at this video of their report. And it was like the protest was quite small and it shows like that's what they do.
No, I remember when I was a child, my parents would sometimes take my siblings and I to pray outside of either abortion clinics or in one case, Christ Hospital, because they were performing abortions there despite the name of the hospital.
Wow.
And media came up. And started asking questions. And as a little child, I'm naive. I'm like, oh my gosh, what if they ask us questions and we're going to be on TV? And my dad says, Shay, they only go to old people. They only talk to the old people here. They don't want anyone to think that there are young people interested in the pro-life movement. They have to curate a very specific image about who's interested in this.
That sounds pretty legit.
Oh, my father's very legit.
Introduce him to us.
Well, where do we go from here?
We just keep doing what we're doing. We keep having a movement so strong that they need to lie about how many people believe in it.
I usually think like, okay, if this is true, the narrative is shattering and, you know, base reality is coming back to fruition. Now it's our chance to craft base reality. We can
kind of build back better.
What's it going to look like?
Do you want to do a great
build
reset?
Build back greater, Seamus. I'm not in with this World Economic Forum thing.
I wonder if this will precipitate some, other people coming out though. You know, Evangeline Lilly. Is this because we're seeing, you know, Bill Maher, Barry Weiss, and other liberals now signal to the left, like, hey, it's safe now, you can come out of hiding.
Yeah, big time, yeah. That's the Barry Weiss thing. I is maybe as cringe as you had pointed out, it comes a year late, I'm still glad it happened. Because it was so high profile.
Well, the question is whether she's going to get canceled. Mm-hmm. We don't know at this point.
I mean, they might try, but I don't think so. Because her attitude is very defiant. She doesn't care. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? It's when people immediately become demure and back down, you know they don't mean it. But I mean, it looks like she really means it. I think I don't think she just posted this image. I think she made a video about it. But let me pull up her Instagram and we'll take a look.
You know what else? I'd kind of like to suggest this. I haven't looked into this because the thought just came to me, but I would be curious to see how likely these large studios are to refuse to work with famous celebrities when their stock price is down. Because right now the market's not doing too great. And I wonder if that gives leverage to entertainers and performers.
Maybe.
I bet it does, yeah.
Well, when the industry is flopping, you know, we had Christian Toto on talking about Hollywood freaking out. When Hollywood's losing their power and everyone's in panic because they're aging out, the movies aren't making as much money. I mean, these Marvel movies are blockbusters. They're massive. They're billion-dollar movies. But the industry itself, it looks like it's in a downward trajectory outside of that. Everything's consolidating. Originality is on the decline. You know, wokeness. It may be even that people have finally realized to get woke, go broke.
You know,
there was a story about the new Superman comic I was reading from Bounding Into Comics. The new Superman comic where Superman's son is bisexual. It sold like half what the other one sold. Now, I don't know. We talked about it. Some were saying it's because the companies decide to sell less to comic book stores and like that, but I'm like, okay, maybe I don't know the nitty gritty of this, but I do know that people are complaining about it. They don't want to buy it. You know, if the fans don't like it, they don't buy it. So maybe that stuff's having an impact. And now people, Hollywood celebrities might just be like, it doesn't matter anymore because this whole narrative from the left is ineffective. It loses money. When you look at, and it could even be as simple as Joe Biden's approval rating. People look and they're like, Democrats are not popular and they're retiring en masse. I'm jumping ship before it's too late.
Also, like you said earlier, Carrie, the Omicron changed the terrain. It basically changed the layout of what's going on with COVID. It's a less deadly, more contagious, or I don't even know. Is it
more contagious? It's endemic. It's more contagious. It's more mild. But to your point on Hollywood, The Chosen, and if y'all haven't seen The Chosen, you need to see The Chosen. It's free. You guys know about The Chosen?
I've heard good things.
Okay, so The Chosen is a serial video series about the life of Christ. And it was the most successful crowdfunded movie project ever. And it was just Christians who wanted to have the story of Jesus told. And it's with acting, and it's just very well done. It's incredible. The details, it's sort of like fan fiction, but it's actually, you know, based on the Bible, not making a bunch of stuff up. They then, because the serial, like they released it basically like a TV series, they then decided to do a Christmas special in box office. And it actually, this past Christmas season, it just came out in box office. It actually, the opening weekend per theater shattered all the big Hollywood films, including they defeated on revenue per theater House of Gucci, which was like this, you know, huge money suck. So it was incredible. And that just shows, and I actually interviewed the executive producer of The Chosen. I said, how did you guys slay the giant here? Like, how did you guys do this? And, they said, well, it's just the content. And I said, well, I'm sure now at this point, as you were so successful, you've been approached by big houses. And they said, yeah, but we're not going to surrender. We're not going to give that up because they're going to try to pervert what we want to preach, which is the gospel of Jesus. And they're giving away for free. And their goal is to have it in the hands, I think, of 2 billion people. I mean, they've already had, you know, hundreds of millions of people have viewed this. So it's incredible.
Yeah, good for them. We were sort of speaking about Hollywood and the fact that they're failing. And I think obviously a huge reason why new companies like this are becoming successful is because there's a niche in the market that needs to be filled. People don't want to be preached at, or ironically, even when they do want to be preached at, they at least want it to be entertaining. And I think there are obviously ways of spreading Christian morals and messages that don't come off as preaching, which are genuinely entertaining. Now, when it comes to whether traditional Hollywood is going to be able to turn this spiral around and climb back up, I think the answer is probably no. And the reason that I'm saying that, it's not just out of a sense of optimism here, and I could be wrong, but I don't think this is a group of people who on the individual level are interested in success. I believe because of their ideology, they see themselves as victims and they're satisfied complaining about how corrupt the system is when they fail. So they don't need to get a taste of success.
I think these are, when it comes to Hollywood, when it comes to the establishment left and the media, these are people who are only satisfied if someone else tells them they're worthy. Mm-hmm. So that's why they all just virtue signal to each other. But eventually that group becomes so broken and just brittle that they have no choice but to seek validation outside of that.
Exactly.
And so I think that's part of what we're seeing. You know, look, for Evangeline Lilly to come out and say this is amazing and it's glad to see it's happening among celebrities, who was there first is the question, you know. Who are the people that were always standing up for people's rights, that always stood on principle, never backed down, never questioned it? Mm-hmm. I mean, those are the people of true principle. So I can certainly say thank you to everybody who's coming around being like, we were wrong about this. It's good to admit you were wrong. Or if you never spoke up about it, speaking up about it now, it's a good thing. Thank you for joining the fray. Mm-hmm. But I think it's important to keep that eye out. Some people are just looking for validation. And if they can't get it anymore because their side has gone nuts, they'll just pretend like they want validation from you. Mm-hmm. Or at least they do want it and they're desperate for any kind of adoration. Mm-hmm. You know, people who don't know how to think for themselves. So they just say to you, you know, tell me what to say, tell me what to think.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I think we saw a little bit of that with Claire Lehman and Quillette, where they kind of insinuated their way into what was considered the ideological dark web, which was that right wing. Here, let me turn myself up a little bit. And they kind of told right wingers what they wanted to hear until it came an opportunity for them to be authoritarianism. And then they jumped.
Oh, yeah. Claire, for those aren't familiar with Quillette and Claire Lehman, I mean, this is a really good example of the inverse. This is a publication that claimed to be like the intellectual dark web outlet. Now, the founder is pro-relocation camp for COVID patients and for the COVID suspects in Australia. Quillette and the founder are opposing efforts to get critical race praxis out of schools, calling it censorship and anti-free speech. So they came in, they said, come, give us money. And then as soon as they had the opportunity, they just did that shift and they were like, actually, we were cultist authoritarians the whole time.
Hmm.
So what's surprising to me is how many people I know still give Quillette money.
Yeah.
Like people who are following me on Twitter, or I'll see people tweet about it. And I'm just like, wow. You know, there are people that, you know, I've met and I'm like, how are you still involved in this organization that is outright pro critical race theory, that is outright supportive of relocation camps for people suspected of coming into contact with another person who may have had COVID, that they support and defend and lie to protect police going to the homes of people and taking them without charge or trial to a camp. They're like, that's a good thing.
What is it, Claire? And then Josh Zepps, I think, works for them too. Isn't it?
I don't know if he works for them. He's a broadcaster with Australian Broadcasting.
Yeah. Okay. Isn't it that they're basically under duress from their government? It'd be like living in Nazi Germany and having to be like, yeah, no, the Nazis are just fine. Wink, wink. Get no. me out of here.
Wait, hang on.
No.
I've known Josh Zepps for a long time. He was from the left. So I'm shocked to know that. Okay, I didn't know this change about Quillette. So I would imagine that a lot of people are still giving them money because this is news to me. I didn't realize they had turned so sharply left. So if they're still getting money from people on the right, it's because they might not know the shift has happened. Because Josh Zepps, I mean, he's a nice person, but he is not a conservative in any sort of right sort of way.
But I mean,
so it's interesting, because that must be a new recent thing. Because when I've worked with him, it was, you know, 2016, and he was the left guy.
Well, Quillette was like. Well, Claire Lehman worked for Rebel in Canada, I'm pretty sure. So that's very conservative.
Yeah. But Ian, authoritarianism, to you can be point, liberal or Ian, conservative and still be an authoritarian.
Right. Well, that's true.
To address your point, Ian, I have to say, no, they're not. They may be under some duress to a certain degree. But if Avi Yemeni can go out in Australia, this reporter, this journalist, this personality, and stand in front of police officers and say, you cannot make me leave, I'm a journalist. Okay, if he can do that, Quillette can certainly be like, we think it's bad they're putting people in camps. Because Avi does. You know, he does it all day, every day. So there's a guy who has principles and a backbone who's challenging the authoritarianism. Quillette, they you know, played their little flute and attracted everybody to come over and throw money to them. And then now it's just been like, the state is great.
Those camps can go wrong when
if there's an emergency, but
like, even if the government doesn't want to hurt people, if there's an emergency and like a flood and then people are stuck in the camp, that's when the guards start have to make split second decisions. That's when things can go really bad, is if the guards are going to have to leave their post for some emergency. You don't want people stuck in camps.
The camps went bad when the camps existed.
The idea of like a landing zone camp is understandable for incoming people in a quarantine and that kind of Well, I mean, I understand the idea of a quarantine. You 40 days in port, you wait, and then they let you into the country. That's the history of the word quarantine from Venice.
40.
Yeah.
Building camps.
Yeah.
It's the first step, to be fair, it's a
piece on the chessboard that it can be used for great authoritarian damage, but it also could be used for its, you know, benevolent use. But when an emergency happens, that's when you see the guards are like, I can't let these people out. There's no running water anymore. Well, and people are like starving
also,
in the camp.
What's to say these camps wouldn't become super spreader events themselves? Yeah. That's what I don't understand. Because wasn't that the whole thing of liberals at the border? Because they were saying, oh, we can't detain any illegal immigrant because they're going to be in these super spreader camps. So we should just let them all go. Mm-hmm. So that's what makes no sense to me about these camps in Australia, just from a logistical standpoint.
Josh Zaps is the guy who said that they were international arrival bungalows.
Mm. Bungalow.
Sounds like an Airbnb. And then Claire Lehman is the one who took a bunch of these propaganda photos of Olympic athletes of like, you know, hot babes, she called it. And she was like, look at all the hot babes in this relocation camp.
She didn't say
relocation camp, but I did. And so, we made a shirt that's, people on a beach with razor wire in front of them and a guy running from a police boat. And it says, visit Howard Springs, totally voluntary relocation camp.
Yeah. It's actually why Luke left. He saw those women. He's like, I gotta go to
this reminds me of, was it Fry Fest? Remember that big scandal where
Fire Fest.
Yeah, we're like who was the guy doing it? He raised like millions of dollars and was supposed to be this magic camp where all these like influencers.
Just, like,
I remember
like,
this.
With bottled water.
They got sued a ton.
Well, this guy.
Billy McFarland, is that the guy's name?
Is that what it was?
Fraudulent luxury music festival founded by con artist Billy McFarland.
Is he a con artist?
And rapper Ja Rule. I don't know.
Ja Rule. Yeah.
That's from Wikipedia.
That's how it was.
Having a failed event. It's not the same as conning people. You know what I mean?
Like, I'm just saying from a marketing standpoint.
Remember when TumblrCon or whatever it was called?
Oh my goodness. And they had the inflatable ball pit?
Yeah, and it was like a kiddie pool.
I was there.
It was in the balls, dude.
DerbyCon? Yeah, they were like, we're going to do a convention for Tumblr. And then, you know, everybody bought tickets. But then it was just a big empty, like, warehouse with, like, an inflatable kiddie pool from Walmart full of balls. But so like, I wouldn't consider that a fraud or a scam just because someone's incompetent. You know what I mean?
I'm just saying, if you're calling it a bungalow, words matter. That's all. That's what I'm saying.
And then of course, he's the guy who went on Joe Rogan's show and said, you know, essentially that me and Majid Nawaz were alt-right.
Yeah.
And then Joe Rogan calls him out, and then he says, well, not Majid, because I know Majid. It's like, so you're saying Tim Pool is...
alt-right means I don't know them.
Yes.
No, it's just these people are... I'm going to say, like, I think they're evil people. So, Josh Zeps...
I don't think Josh Zeps is evil.
He's supporting camps where the police go to women... They went to a woman's home, and they said you are being arrested without charge or trial... And she said she was told it was because she lied to them, that they took her from her home and put her in a camp for 2 weeks. This guy lied about what these camps were doing, defended it, accused me of being alt-right for suggesting it, lied about my characterization of what was going on Joe Rogan's show. Joe didn't have enough information to defend what I'd actually said. This dude is evil. When they have camps and the police go to your home and say, come with us. We have the authority to take you under duress with no due process. And he's going on the radio and saying, everybody, it's all right. Go along with the police. Get in the train car. Get in the train car. Yeah, that's evil. That is an evil. I'm not going to swear. It's an evil guy.
100%. Okay. Here's
my question. Is Josh Stepps, though, more a product? Because Josh is sort of his personality. I'm not saying his beliefs. I don't believe that. He's an affable, likable person. I think he's just doing this because the system is, you know, telling him he has to do this in order to whatever.
That's the banality of evil.
But that's what I'm saying. So is he, I guess it's all about, intent. Is he intentionally evil or is he not? I don't think he's intentionally
evil. You could say he's kind, generous, and honest and still evil. Like that can be true.
Like let's be honest. Mm-hmm. Lex Luthor, right? Mm-hmm. A character in comic books often does try to save the world, but he doesn't care who he kills in the way. Dr. Doom, for the same reason. I'm not saying that Josh Epps is on par with any of these supervillain characters. But when he comes out and I'll be kind. When I somewhat hyperbolically said that these camps were concentration camps, as the Holocaust Museum defines it, that's a camp where you're taken without due process. That's literally how the Holocaust Museum defined it. So I'm not even, you know, I'm somewhat trolling on Twitter, and I've admitted that. I'm like, I'm just pushing buttons and like, you know, posting silly nonsense. So he gets mad and he's like, calling an international arrival bungalow a concentration camp is wrong. And then I'm like, okay, you know, my response was, I was being a little hyperbolic, that I can accept, but come on, international rival bungalow? My point was, it's only a matter of time before they round up their own citizens and send them to the camp. Mm-hmm. And after that did happen, and I was proven right, he still lies about what I said. Quillette does everything in their power to mischaracterize my claims. When I said, you had the, I think it was the premier of the Northern Territories. I don't know a whole lot about Australian politics, to be honest. I have a bunch of friends down there. I talk to them quite often. They tell me what's going on. So then I read news stories. He said that the people who live in these areas no longer had the right to leave their homes unless it was a medical emergency. That means you can't even leave your home for food. That's what I said. How did they characterize what I said? The state is depriving them of food. No, I said you can't even leave your home to get food. So if you're hungry, you got to wait. And then his response, but they're delivering food to their homes. I'm like, great. When the state locks you in your house like China did, like the Chinese Communist Party did, when they show up to your house and take you by vehicle to a camp, and you lie about what I said, you lie to defend it, and then you accuse me of being alt-right in an attempt to deflect the entire conversation. I'm sorry. There's no way you can argue that man is not an evil piece of garbage.
Well, good for you for admitting that you spoke, you know, you even said, okay, I was trolling, and he didn't have the courage to respond in any sort of gracious, you know, or whatever.
They mention, you know, Tim even acknowledged that he was being facetious a bit or whatever. And I'm like, right, I'm not literally saying that they're, you know, putting Australians in gas chambers.
No, but they are concentrating them in camps.
The Holocaust Museum said,
call a spade a spade, man. Get over it.
So I think it was. I don't know. There's a Holocaust Museum website. I think it might be out of Illinois. And they said, what makes a concentration camp different from a normal prison? They said, when you are placed there without due process. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, okay, well, if that's their definition. But I wasn't even getting to that point. I was just saying, like, the historical and traditional definition was where people were being heavily concentrated, typically, in a time of war or conflict.
Yeah, in Nazi Germany, they weren't being gassed at the concentration camps in the beginning either. They were just concentrating people there.
Well, some of them they
just
were.
Just moving them
but
there.
But some of them
not
were.
Not in the very beginning.
Some of them were always.
They were work camps at first.
Well, I think history will show, and is already showing, that Josh Epps is on the absolute wrong side of everything. He's on the wrong side of science. He's on the wrong side of policy. He's on the wrong side of economics. So at the end of the day, I don't really care what Josh Epps has to say. So props to you. I'm on your side,
it's
100%.
About him.
But I think... I guess my point is that, you know, as far as, so for Independent Women's Forum, we're all about trying to get persuadable people. And so we try to be, as we like to say, happy warriors. We don't try to use language that is so hyperbolic that we're going to turn people off. But the problem is, in this day and age, when everyone is always about throwing bombs and trying to be the most outrageous, jumping the shark, you know, how does something reasonable, how does it break through? Is that why we have to use the most extreme language to go after somebody like Josh Epps? Like that's what I find so upsetting, because I'm like, I don't want to call him an evil person. I think he's totally wrong, and I think he's just on the wrong side of everything. But like, at what point do we, you know, turn people off by being so, you know, hyperbolic?
Well, that's what Josh is saying. This is the challenge. There's a line. And that line is, if someone's going around, you know, murdering babies, for instance, like, Do you just say, we don't think that's evil? We just disagree.
Well, that is evil, yeah.
Whoa.
That is evil, yeah.
So,
but what I'm saying is there are good people, there are people who are good who believe in abortion. As in, like, they don't understand why it's evil. So everyone who's gotten an abortion is an evil person? Is that what you're saying?
But how about a guy who goes around and lies about what they're actually doing and tells you all of the truths and realities when you guys go out and say, here's what they're actually doing, and then someone goes on the radio and says, don't listen to them, they're lying. They're actually white supremacists. None of that happens. They're not selling body parts. That's all not true. Listen to my voice. Listen. Is it evil to go on the radio and tell millions of people that the truth is actually not true? Look. There have been a bunch of stories about Planned Parenthood and the selling of body parts, and we covered them on this show. But you go to some of these news websites, and they will outright tell you, it never happened.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is that evil? Is it evil?
Might be ignorant.
Well, I think
Seamus, is it evil?
Yeah, absolutely it's evil.
No, I agree. Planned Parenthood is evil.
Yeah.
And I guess, like I said, it's all about intent. So if – I think a lot of things are repeated in the media – because of peer pressure and because they actually don't take the time, they're not intellectually curious, there's so much groupthink. So I think there are a lot of people who might repeat something because they don't actually know that it's evil. So in that case, is the intent of them repeating a lie? I guess it's splitting hairs here, but I think it's important from just a messaging standpoint.
Let me ask. So when Josh Zepps, you know, when I said my point was that it's only a matter of time before they take Australian citizens and bring them there. When he discovered that was true, would it then still be good for him to lie about what I said and not admit he was wrong?
No, that would be evil. I guess that's what I'm saying is the intent and the ignorance, you know, it's all about intent and ignorance. So if someone is truly ignorant about what they're saying, how can you judge them as the same as someone who is not truly investigated? That's my
Oh yeah, it's not malicious.
Well, also, I think there's a really important distinction we need to make here, because I think you guys might agree, but the way the language is coming across, there seems as if there's more of a disagreement than there is. We can make a distinction between this person is evil and this action was evil. So we can say that a particular individual might not be morally culpable for engaging in an evil behavior because they didn't know better, but said behavior was still evil.
The sin versus the sinner.
Well, exactly.
Love the sinner, hate the sin.
Exactly.
I guess that's what Jesus said.
But yeah, I see what the Quillette people are doing as willful.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. If you know better, then that is, I agree, that's evil. If you intentionally know the damages of CRT and what it does to race relations, what it does to black people, tells them they are hopelessly, basically damned, that's evil. I agree. And if you know that and you're now lying willfully, maliciously, then yeah, I think that's evil. But I think it's all about how much do you know? That's all.
Right, but so that would just be the banality of evil, right?
Yes.
So the people in Nazi Germany who are just like, I was just following orders or whatever,
exactly.
We called that the banality of evil.
But you're talking about premeditated evil.
Yeah.
Like malicious, intentional destruction.
And that's what I'm saying is like, okay, and I guess I'm saying this all as someone who was raised in a very abusive cult. Mm-hmm. When someone came at me and tried to attack me, that's the whole point of a cult, is that it actually made me trench in more.
Yeah.
So that's my fear when we go around and call people evil without putting the knowledge and the education in front of it, then they actually entrench even more.
Josh Zepps, when he was on Rogan, specifically said he felt like he would be talking to one of his friends and be like, well, the thing is, okay, they said they were constantly, they're actually just, and then Tim is out there being like, no, don't listen to him. Don't listen to Josh.
And that's
Josh,
and
they
that's,
are constantly,
and that's
but wait,
the
listen.
Lie.
And so Josh feels attacked. You could tell from the way he was explaining it that he felt that you were irrationally attacking.
And that's the lie because.
And that's the miscommunication.
What he was saying was when he was talking to Australian people, but we don't have a particularly prominent Australian audience at all. I know for a fact. I look at the numbers. I know the geographics. I know that people in Australia do listen to us sometimes. And they super chat saying, like, the hours are wonky because of when you guys go live in Eastern time. But his point was that when he's talking with people in Australia who mostly don't know who we are, no, he was angry because, in my opinion, even Joe said this. And I don't even know if Joe was joking. He was just like, are you working for the state? He's like, because every criticism comes up, you deflect, you defend. And he's like, they got you on those state drugs? What is it? And so I'm like, then Joe comes out in a later episode and he was like, that dude, you can't do that. accuse Majid Nawaz and Tim Pool of being alt-right or whatever. But I don't want to keep harping on this one guy. I think everyone gets the point.
Can I just mention one more thing? Because you made a really interesting point about how you're not really going to persuade people if you come at them in too harsh a way. And I think ultimately it's a question of whether the person you are interacting with is someone you can say with any degree of certainty is acting in good faith.
Right.
And so oftentimes there are people who really don't know better. And so I'll have a conversation with somebody about abortion or homosexuality or something where I believe they're misinformed. And I think in that case, it doesn't make sense to sit there and tell them that they're an evil person. But then again, if I'm speaking to an abortionist who knows what's happening, who's actually killing these children, I mean, that person is evil. And so there's going to be a different approach, I think.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. And I think also because, like I said, for what I do on a day-to-day basis, I'm trying to reach women. Sadly, women are so susceptible to the total BS of CRT. They are so much more susceptible to the language of the left. I mean, even the New York Times actually did this big, long write-up about gender differences on college campuses and how, compared to the 80s, believe it or not, men in the 80s, according to the study, were actually more liberal than women in the 80s. And flash forward to now, where liberal women are far more liberal, and women have bought into the lies of CRT and just all of this, the sexual, you know, total, I don't want to swear, but just made up stuff about, you know, the patriarchy and things like that. So it's like, okay, how do I reach a female audience and telling them they're evil to spread off the bat is not going to work.
That is so, not at all what I'm talking about.
Yeah, no, I understand. I understand and I agree with you. Someone who knowingly is spreading this to millions of people, that is evil. I agree.
When it comes to an individual who may be doing something like they're smashing, you know, dragonflies or something just for no reason. Mm-hmm. And then you're like, hey, they shouldn't do that because those dragonflies are actually killing mosquitoes or something. I wouldn't come at them and be like, you evil sin. I'd be like, excuse me.
Yeah.
Did you know? And if they say, that's interesting. Hey, everybody, this guy's lying and he's racist. I'd be like, okay, this person's evil.
Exactly.
This person's acting in bad faith. They're malicious. They want to destroy. They want to cause harm. Or they believe they have rights over you and they should lie to you to control you.
Yeah.
So if the average person is engaging in something that's bad, well, yeah. You treat them like a regular person. In fact, I don't even give them – it's not even about one chance. It's about two, three chances even.
What if you talk to a little kid and he's like, you're stupid. And you're like, no, actually, I'm actually kind of smart. And the kid's like, no, you're stupid. Is the kid evil just because he keeps telling you you're a liar? He's like, no, you're a racist liar. And you're like, no, I'm not. And he's like, yeah, racist liar. Like, is that six-year-old evil because he's repeating this stuff?
He's six.
Has he reached the age
of he's just repeating. So he's brainwashed. Yes. He's not evil.
But Ian, listen. If that six-year-old starts killing small animals and you tell him to stop and he tells you to shut up because you're stupid and keeps doing it, you might have a problem on
your
hands.
Is he evil or is he brainwashed? I don't know, man. Kids are just a product of their environment for the most part.
Some kids have sort of mental conditions and they harm animals for no reason and they don't stop and they grow up. Some kids like burning things down and they end up killing people. Not every person is always going to be a good person, and sometimes they're very young when they do bad things.
Yeah, I think also I want to add something piggybacking off of what you just said to clarify a statement I made earlier where I was referencing the difference between your average person who believes in abortion and an abortionist. I'm also not suggesting that an abortionist is someone who's completely beyond redemption either. I think that we should try to persuade and help anyone and everyone we can to see the truth, but obviously for different people there's different approaches and some people are going to be more difficult than others. But Ian, I would say that it's a question of whether that child is past the age of reason. And of course, children are much more impressionable, so I think there's more hope in such a circumstance that you're going to be able to modify the behavior. It's not as baked in.
Yeah, well, I think it was Frederick Douglass who said it's easier to build up healthy children than to repair broken men.
Yes.
So I think, you know, I want to go back to something you were talking about with women being more susceptible to CRT and stuff, and I'm wondering if that's due perhaps to, you know, the trope of women being more socially inclined and men being more like physically inclined or you know, goal oriented, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, more achievement or I think there are, it's personality traits. I mean, I think this whole concept of what's toxic masculinity is something that is sprung out of so CRT is just, you know, one branch of critical theory. So there's the critical gender theory, critical race theory, critical class theory, all of these things. So it is one big Marxist lie at the end of the day. But I think women are more susceptible because, well, in general, women are more liberal. I mean, I said the thing about the 80s, but generally speaking, voting patterns nationally is that women, they, you know, it's, the road to hell is paved with good intentions. And so it always sounds nice that Marxism is this fairy tale that sounds nice. Like, why not give everybody free stuff?
What I'm asking is, I feel like it's inverted. I feel like women are more social than men, so they're likely to vote Democrat because of critical race theory. So if you look at Instagram, for instance, the women are substantially more likely to get depressed over likes and posting images than men do. Because there's a social interaction of being accepted and you know being cheered on by your peers, so I'm not a psychologist or an evolutionary psychologist or biologist or anything like that, so I don't know exactly if that's true. Just something that I've read, so I'm wondering. You know, when I look at the poll from Vox that showed around 70% of millennial women are Democrats, is this because of social behaviors that men are less likely to be influenced by? Does that result in them picking up CRT?
That's interesting. I mean, I think there is the groupthink and the virtue signaling and the rewards. So if you come out and you say, I'm a 12-year-old girl and I'm going to start getting testosterone blockers, you will get a lot of Instagram likes.
Yeah.
You're going to be cheered, you know, and it's
And what if you are a 13-year-old girl and say, I was wrong about that and want to stop?
You will be shunned.
Yeah.
Is there any evidence that show if women are more likely to fall into cults than men? Have you guys ever looked into that kind of thing?
That is a good question. Well, what's interesting is that there were, within Mormonism, which we were talking about because my ancestors helped found it, polygamy. It's a thing.
I was just about to mention that.
10 males in polygamy. So,
in Mormonism. Males in Mormonism, just in general.
Well, yeah, I think for sure, in practicing Mormonism.
I think that's the agreeableness. Jordan Peterson's Big Five personality traits, I think it's agreeableness would be the one that would make it people kind of just get along.
Yeah.
Kind of thing.
Well,
and refuse to dissent. Dissent comes with a social cost.
Right.
So, yeah. So the way the left and Marxism has taken over the cultural outputs of media, Hollywood, and academia, the rewards for dissension are de-minimizing every year. So that might be part of it for sure. Tim, I think you're onto something.
I've found multiple articles. Yeah. Women are more likely to be in cults than men.
Mm-hmm. Makes sense. Mm-hmm.
So this one is just from Steemit, so I'm not sure. It says it's from The Independent. I just pulled it up on Google. And it says women are more likely to attend traditional religious services and more vulnerable to joining cults. There's a bunch of other articles talking about the same thing. There was one about Nixium, which from the National Post, that said women are more susceptible to joining cults. And there's another one from 2014 about Brazil, and they said majority of the people around the world in cults are women.
Mm-hmm. And tribal life was probably just like a cult. You got your tribal chief, who's the cult leader, and then everybody else. And then in some like tribes, cultures, where the word comes from, they would like all share the child rearing together. Like all the men would have sex with all the women, and they would just, no one knew who the dad was. They would just all, as a tribe, raise the children. Very cult-like.
It tends to be very ineffective,
very
too.
Very modern-day cult-like, you would consider. That would be a very weird polygamous cult. What were you going to say, Seamus?
Well, I think another way of analyzing this and the political differences that we tend to see between men and women is it seems to be the case, and there are some smaller studies which have suggested this, but men are much more comfortable with hierarchy than women are. Women tend to be more comfortable in an egalitarian
structure. That's what the New York Times article was saying as well.
Interesting. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And it makes sense. And so, you know, there's a time and place for both
which is a very Marxist an idea. The egalitarian promise of Marxism, which is actually a lie because they have their elite party leaders who are, by far the top of the hierarchy.
No, exactly. And so I believe that there's obviously value in this, and I'm, a firm believer in complementarianism and that men and women are different and, our strengths sort of complement one another's weaknesses and vice versa. There are good reasons in some circumstances to be skeptical of an authority structure. And so it's good that that is baked into a women generally in a way that's not baked into men. But also it is often the case where the authority structure is fine and you have to submit to it even if it hurts your ego. And in those cases, a more male way, so to speak, of thinking about the issue tends to be the better one. And it's really interesting that we can actually see how that affects people's voting patterns.
Well, it's interesting you said that about the hierarchy with business, because I remember that's something that Jordan Peterson has said over and over, because, women in business are always like, you know, men always run business and they're, it's all sexism. Why, you know, there's the pay gap, which we know is mythological and isn't real, but they repeat these lies because it makes them feel good because there are fewer female CEOs. And they're always saying, well, we need to have, you know, a female way of doing business. But what, as Jordan Peterson says, okay, if there was an actual female way to do business versus male way, the market would reward this. Like, yes. if there was a non-hierarchical way to do business successfully, the market would reward it. But it doesn't, because it's not true.
Yeah. Who is James Damore? He was
Google.
Google employee.
And he actually wrote, we should change the way we do business here to accommodate women. They called him sexist for it. The weirdest thing to me is that here's a guy who's saying, I recognize that women, you know, are in a patriarchy, and we should be more accommodating to them. And they were like, burn the witch. Or the warlock in this instance.
Warlock, yeah. The wizard.
No, but I mean, he was saying, like, women work better in different environments than men, so why don't we do this, that, or otherwise? And they were like, it was a white supremacist, alt-right racist. And it's just like, so when they agree with you, the racist, when they disagree with you, the racist, sure.
It's like a moth being drawn to the fire. They're like, come, moths, come to the flame. And then when they get too close, they're like, ha, ha, ha. You did exactly what we wanted you to do.
Yeah,
you,
it was a trick.
You spouted our
rhetoric. Well, and then also, if there was a real pay gap, there would be no men ever hired. Like, if you could get the same quality, same caliber, same credentialing of a female worker for whatever, 25% less, hell, y'all would be unemployed.
Except that argument assumes men and women have the equal have equal capabilities. So I always thought that was interesting because there's a video by this guy Maddox. You ever see it? The truth about the wage gap or whatever. He made it a long time ago. It's actually really well done. And he's like, want to know one simple reason why there's no such thing as a pay gap? Because if there was, no company would ever hire men, unless you had to pay the same, but men were better at the job. Mm-hmm. Then they would only hire men.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, it's so sad too that there are people who want to deny the reality of these differences because the world is so beautiful in so many ways, and one of the things that makes it so beautiful is the contrast between men and women. And if we deny that which makes us weaker when we're apart, we're also foregoing that which makes us stronger when we come together, or at least acknowledging that men and women really need each other. But when you want to have this sort of strange, flat, egalitarian Marxist style thinking surrounding gender, you lose all that. There isn't any such thing as a trait which is more prevalent or common among men. You wouldn't refer to like the masculine virtues or feminine virtues or anything like that.
Because Celine Dion, she creates a genderless line of baby clothes because gender is just a construct, and you know?
Which is so crazy.
I went through a really codependent, kind of long-term relationship about 6 years. So I came out of it, pendulum swung the other way, and I was like, I want to be in a relationship where we're equal, where we're both powerful, face, you know, alpha, we're both, you know, equal means the same. And so I tried to go that route, and it didn't work. Men and women aren't the same.
No.
We're very different. Yeah. And sometimes I think women are not equipped to play a support role. It's not that the man can't play a support role, but man, women are good at it. I don't know if that's a generalization.
Like the man is the tank and the woman is the healer.
Yes.
Well, it's also, again, this
D&D
is
fans will
all very shout out, wow. This is all very biblical, so it's going to be very offensive to people. But yeah, well, there's just a natural law structure to things where women do look to men for leadership, and women are miserable when they're with men who won't step up and take that role. They don't enjoy that. They don't
sounding like Jordan Peterson.
I know. It's like it's unbelievable. Here's the thing that people don't understand about men and women: they look for men to be leaders.
Keep going.
That's great.
It's like, here's the thing. Here's the thing.
Can you identify as Jordan Peterson? Can I get your
right now. Yeah, you can get my autograph. Yeah, absolutely.
Ladies and gentlemen, as long as Seamus does identify as Dr. Jordan Peterson, then I can write down that we had him on the show.
That's right. True. Yeah. Well, the thing is, whenever you have one of those relationships where the guy's like, she's the boss, I feel so bad for both of them. For both of them. No one's happy with that arena.
I mean, no one's happy with that arena. There might be a situation
where she's like,
why won't
he just step up and
well,
do the
on,
things?
Hold on, Seamus. What you look at lions, right?
Uh-huh.
And the male lion lazes about, does nothing. The women do all the work, get all the food. He eats whatever he wants first, goes back to sleep, and then she has all the babies.
He's got a baby. No.
Yeah, I mean, isn't that what's going on with these guys?
Not fulfilling. But that's the thing. And I've said this before. We live in a culture where women are acting like men and men are acting like children. And part of the reason women are acting like men is because the men are acting like children, and someone needs to usurp that role, unfortunately. I'm not saying
well, the
it's a
government
good thing.
Is.
That's
government what's
is
happened.
As well.
The government has destroyed, for example, the black family.
Absolutely.
I mean, that's the fact that 75% of black babies pre-welfare were born in two-parent homes, and now it's the reverse. What's happened is that Uncle Sam has taken over the role of the father, the provider in the home.
Perhaps. I mean, I've heard that quite a bit, but I wonder if it's just, how about we just address that first point in whatever form? So, for instance, Black Lives Matter wants to disrupt the nuclear family. I don't know if we need to come out and be like welfare specifically, other than to just say, hey, families are good. Families.
Well, yeah, it's the culture. It's always a feedback loop, but the culture predicated the policy, and then the policy exacerbated the culture because it didn't happen overnight.
I want to talk about
I mentioned one more thing. There was actually an analysis, I believe, from the Brookings Institute, which is really fascinating because it said that the primary reason for the breaking up of the black family and the fatherlessness epidemic, which of course we are catching up to as well, was actually Roe v. Wade. And the fact that women could get abortions really subverted the family structure.
It was all of it. I think it was also just the normalization with the 60s of the disruption of, you know, the drug, sex, and rock and roll. That basically the norms of, okay, let's wait till we're married before we have sex.
Well,
that was totally thrown out the window.
So this whole era was the infantilization of a generation.
Yeah.
To be told to live for your pleasures, for your short-term gains, for your whims, like a child. Instead of realizing you got to roll up your sleeves and strive for yourself, that trickles down. And you know, I look at, I hear these stories. You know, your grandfather, he could support a family of five on a high school education, and I'm just like, there's a lot to break down there in terms of, you know, even immigration and stuff like that. But also, these are people who fought in World War II, and they knew the value of hard work, and they knew what it meant that if you did not struggle to survive, you did not survive. And then you get the next generation that have all the fruits of World War II. The you know, we decimated the Japanese and German industries. That you know, among a variety of things, our industries explode. Our economy is booming. We have all of these babies, and they grew up in a world where everything's handed to them. Now, I'm very much critical of overall of the boomer generation.
Oh, yeah,
they've extracted a ton of wealth for themselves. They're hoarding all of that wealth. And yeah, I certainly think millennials are a lost generation too. But I think it starts with this, and I think it's very simply, you know, you can call it Strauss-Howe generational theory. You could call it strong men make good times make weak men make hard times, etc. And we're in that hard time phase. So the way I view the boomer generation, some of Gen X and millennials as their children, they are childlike generations. They don't understand the real world. And by real world, I mean, take a human being, take away all of their clothing and their everything they own and put them in the middle of the woods. Welcome to reality. Because that's what life was like. But we've created this bubble of security and safety and industry and technology, and we're all born into it. Imagine starting a video game, like you're playing, you know, Zelda, but you have every weapon and every item. You wouldn't understand what you're earning in the video game. Imagine if you're playing an RPG and your character starts completely invincible with all of this power and money. You'd be like, what am I doing here?
Exactly.
Why am I playing this game?
It makes the game hard to learn when you have all the abilities when you start.
Well, and that's boring. I 10,000% everything you just said, I completely agree with. I mean, like the word teenager didn't exist really. Like the concept of a teenager, a teen. I'm a teen, a preteen, or whatever. Like, that didn't really happen, I don't think, until the 50s. Like, is the word teenager in the Bible? No. Is it in the Odyssey? No. Like, it's a concept. It is a wealthy, post-industrialized, rich country, spoiled, who's living off the backs of the greatest generation.
You want to get real offensive to everybody? Feminism only exists in secure, wealthy nations.
Absolutely. Yep. Yes. Yep. 10,000%. It's a luxury. It's a luxury item in.
It's a correction mechanism. It redistributes the wealth because once that society has feminism, it starts to collapse and the societies that actually have their gender roles together, sexual roles together take over. But it's also the case that with the boomers, what's so tragic about that generation is we look back on them, and when I say we, I'm talking about the common narrative, not necessarily what people here believe. But people look back on them as if they were this incredible revolutionary generation that came in and shook the foundations. Dude, their parents had lived through the Great Depression and then lived through the Second World War, many of them fighting in it, and even those who didn't fight in it had to struggle through the hard times of rationing. And then with all of the wisdom that their parents had accumulated, they turned around and were like, we need to give them our wisdom. They're like, mom and dad, like, no, I'm going to go to a rock and roll concert and have sex with strangers. And we look back on this as if we call it a revolution. It was the sexual revolution. And that's great if you understand the term revolution the way I do, which is in a negative connotation. But to glorify that kind of behavior, it was a generation of spoiled teenagers who ended up ruining their inheritance.
No, totally. And it's not progressive at all. It is regressive. Talking about like what you were talking about, our ancestors living in huts and you know, I have Native American ancestors, so I can say this. You know, it's savage. It's living in, you know, societies that are, you know, promiscuous. That's, it's regressive to go back to that. Marriage was an innovation for women.
I'm not as negative on feminism as you are, Seamus. You know,
One is.
So when I say, you know, getting offensive, I think it's a fact that if you look across the world at all of these countries, the countries that are least secure, it's very difficult for women to have rights, to have power.
Sure.
Because war, conflict, aggression. But I think we need a healthy balance. I certainly think there's been instances of, you know, men controlling too much and women being less involved. But now we're going the other way where our society is becoming overtly feminine. Mm-hmm. I think there needs to be a happy medium of a matriarch and a patriarchal kind of approach to things, like a mother and a father. There's a meme where someone's like, he's standing on a cliff and he says, a company boards should have a man and a woman. And everyone's like, yay. And then he goes, a child should have a mother and a father. And they're like, boo. But I'm like, no, I think that it scales and there is a benefit to a masculine and a feminine view. And if it skews too much in one direction, you get, you know, authoritarianism in different ways.
Yeah, I would say, and this is part of why I still disregard feminism, even though I absolutely agree that in many parts of the world, women are treated like dirt, and also throughout history, men have not always treated women well, obviously. Humans are a fallen species. But in those systems, it's not that you have a patriarchy, it's that you have an extremely disordered patriarchy, where the men are effeminate, they're not virtuous, they don't stand up for their women and protect them, they treat them poorly because their conception of the relationship between men and women is women need to give, 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 and I need to take, take, take. Whereas the way men are supposed to operate is as giving, and women are to operate essentially as receptive based on any kind of natural law vision of the world.
Let's do a hard, hard segue, because we went off into a whole new universe on that one. We have this story. We're going to talk about it. We got this from CNN. Scientists slam Joe Rogan's podcast episode with Jordan Peterson as absurd and dangerous.
Absurd. What are they talking about? It was the greatest podcast ever.
I was listening to some of it. I'm saving it because I'm going on a trip this weekend. So I was like, I want to be able to listen to the full 4 hours. But Jordan Peterson really does say absurd. You know, like kind of like absurd. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. This segment is not about CNN complaining about Joe Rogan's podcast. It's about Joe Rogan's basically the New York Times. I've talked about this before. Setting the news cycle. What is the story we should be talking about? The New York Times, above the fold, front page news story, Ukraine invasion, Russia goes. Are we talking about whatever it is the New York Times cares about? Not really. We're talking about what Jordan Peterson and Joe Rogan want to talk about. Did I say Jordan Peterson before? Joe Rogan is effectively...
you said Joe Rogan.
I said Joe Rogan. He's become the New York Times. So when CNN is like, scientists are upset at Joe Rogan's podcast over his story, Joe has just gotten them to talk about climate change. And now here we are addressing the issue. Joe Rogan's been in the news cycle nonstop for like, what now, months over the guests he's been having, and it's with increasing frequency. Check this out. First, you have CNN. Joe Rogan and Jordan Peterson. We have The Verge. Spotify can't afford to lose Joe Rogan. Now it's not even about Neil Young anymore. It's just about him. We have this from The Independent. What is this one? Joe Rogan podcast guest claims pandemic is just a money grab and they're trying to kill us once again. And that's Jordan Peterson. So what I see here is, look, man, you know, we're effectively becoming the Joe Rogan Review podcast. I'm going to talk about this. But to be honest, we were the CNN Review podcast before that. We criticize the media. We criticize the mainstream press and the media lies. And now that Joe is basically taking over, you know, dictation of the news cycle, it is becoming prominent. It is becoming common to discuss the ideas that he's talking about. In fact, so prominent, I believe, I could be wrong, but I believe the 13th biggest podcast in the U.S. is the Joe Rogan Experience Review.
Whoa.
Yeah. It's not like even some guys talking about what Joe Rogan talked about.
Wow.
Yeah.
Is he the number one?
Joe Rogan isn't on iTunes anymore.
Oh yeah, Spotify.
So, of course, he's number one on Spotify.
Right.
Never moving. But on iTunes, I think it's number 13 is the Joe Rogan Review podcast.
So this is so interesting to me, and watching the mainstream media try to slam podcasts as like this huge source of mis and disinformation is really intriguing to me, because it looks like they're starting to wake up to the fact that Joe Rogan is in fact calling the shots. Like you were saying, he is in fact controlling the narrative. He's making them talk about this one thing that he wants to talk about. And whether they realize it or not, they're very much responding to exactly what he's doing, which if you were a very clever person, I'm sure he could use exactly to his advantage. And you're right. I do think that should give us a lot of hope as far as the right is concerned. I think that this means that the media is kind of starting to pay attention to the right, starting to hopefully perhaps maybe cater to the right. Not that we really necessarily want them to, but it's definitely a factor. And things are definitely shifting, so perhaps the tide is turning.
I was right, real quick, just to pull it up.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I've got the iTunes top charts. Joe Rogan Experience Review Podcast, number 13.
Right below.
And
Ben
Father
Shapiro.
Mike Schmitz is still top 10 with the Bible in a year. He was the number one podcast.
Wow, look at
he
that.
Was the number one podcast
he's,
for a
he's
while.
He's Father, what a waste.
He's I hate
he is so attractive.
But that is exactly priests. There are so many. Look, the priesthood is not just for men who are not attractive. If you aren't an attractive young man, do not think your vocation would be a waste.
Can you be a female priest?
No. That's a priestess. We don't have those.
Yeah.
Priestess?
Yeah.
Think Catholicism needs more priestesses? This is cool because I don't think Rogan I don't consider him on the right at all, and by any means. The dude wants like universal basic income. He's super like kind of left libertarian. But anything that's not far left these days, people are like, it's right. Because they're trying to centralize
the far
left. Yeah, I
think like Joe Rogan, I think of him as independent. Like, yeah, I really do. And yes, anything that is not Marxist is right wing.
Yeah.
But I just think of him as independent.
I've mentioned this before, but when I'm on my first day of college, or in the very least, it was the first class I ever took at college. I was at a local community college, and this was in 2013. And my art teacher recommended the Joe Rogan Experience. And at the time, the art teacher was liberal. Today, he would probably be considered, if he has the same opinions, independent or right wing. And I remember thinking, what is this like liberal garbage podcast he's about to recommend me? And I remember when I first listened to Joe Rogan, I enjoyed it, but I was like, oh yeah, this guy's definitely like on the left, but I kind of want to hear his opinions. And now Joe Rogan is considered this far right figure. It's so bizarre how quickly that shifted.
That's, I think, what happened to Trump, because it's like Trump don't, that was one reason. I was actually a never Trumper in 2016. I now am totally ashamed to admit this. Please don't hate me. I was living in New York, so the vote didn't matter. I wrote in Ben Sass. I totally regret my 2016 vote. But I was a never Trumper till the end. But then in 2020, I proudly voted for Trump. But one of the reasons why I was never Trumper was that I thought that Trump wasn't a conservative. I was like, this guy donated to Hillary Clinton. He has no track record that I can look to suggest that he would do anything that's conservative. But I think just by how insanely Marxist the Democrat Party had become, that's who he was, an independent person, and he donated to both sides. But, you know, I think I was unwilling to break my perception and my bigotry toward this notion of someone had to have this label as conservative or liberal.
So I was just looking at the podcast charts. Someone had commented on one of my podcasts, and they said, I referred to Democrats as city, urban, liberal types.
And?
City, urban, liberal types.
That's cult.
That's right.
That's true.
That's cult. And they were like, did you mean to do that? And I was like, oh, wow, I did not. Oh, nice. I was just like, these city,
nice.
Urban, liberal types.
Like, so, second.
We go. We got a new acronym.
I love this idea, too. That alternative media is dangerous and these podcasters are dangerous, as if it was the alternative media that lied us into a 20-year long war, as if it was alternative media that refused to entertain the possibility that this virus could have been manufactured, as if it was alternative media that was trying to suppress whistleblowers and remove people's platforms from them. It's so obvious.
Well,
at this point.
Don't you know that it was actually Joe Rogan who ordered that missile strike on Abdul Rahman al-Awlaki?
Oh my gosh. Do you guys remember?
He was that child, 16-year-old kid who was killed in a drone strike in Yemen.
Oh my gosh.
And Barack Obama was sitting at his table, and it was, you know, his cabinet comes in, and they're like, Mr. President, we got a child that needs to die. And Obama was like, Joe, what do I do? And then Joe was like, look, man, look, you got to bomb this kid, dude. And then they smoke some DMT.
Well, that's the insane thing, right? These people are such lapdogs for the establishment. And when they say that these podcasts are threatening, we all know what they're really saying is that they are a threat to our control.
Yeah. I don't know if it's funny enough for a bit or whatever, but it would be, you know, the gag I'm imagining is like the New York Times is researching like the Iraq WMDs. And Joe Rogan's sitting in the room, and he's like, they got weapons of, he's like smoking, and he's like, yo, they got weapons of mass destruction. I'm like, are you sure? Dude, I'm so sure. And they're like, oh,
we're gonna do it. Trump's like, you know what? I think there was Russian collusion, like all of the conspiracy
theories. Every story, like just Joe having to have been there.
Those 13 Marines who died last August, Joe Rogan ordered Joe Biden to drop that strike.
Yeah, exactly. Well, exactly. Like, these people are so dangerous. It's so frightening. Who, who convinced the American people or tried to convince the American people that it was a great idea to engage in literally the largest transfer of wealth that's ever existed in all of human history and print trillions of dollars? Was that alternative media? Why is food so expensive right now?
Joe Rogan.
Joe Rogan is on the Fed.
He's on the Fed. He's in a room chilling with Bezos and Bill Gates, and he just goes, "Yeah, I'm just saying, there's too many people."
Oh my gosh. Whoa, but you remember when that was like the edgy
You know what?
Thing
I actually heard that Margaret Sanger is an ancestor of Joe Rogan.
It runs in the family. What if, you know, it's funny, like we're joking about it. And obviously the joke is that they keep accusing him of being so dangerous or whatever that we're jokingly tying into all these things. I think that would be one of the best conspiracies ever. That like Joe actually is the leader of the Illuminati and he keeps Alex close because you've got to keep your friends close but your enemies closer.
Ooh.
So he keeps Alex Jones on standby.
It could also be
no
like,
one would suspect
no,
Joe.
He's the foil.
They're just like if like 5 years from now they try to claim that Joe was on the exact opposite side of every issue that he was actually on because of how people reflect on the past. Like, remember when Joe Rogan was like crazy in favor of the mandates? And in the media, we were like, that's irresponsible, man.
How could he?
That's what it's remarkable. I mean, that's kind of what we're seeing now when you see these, like, you know, that's why I'm critical of Bill Maher to a certain degree.
Yeah.
Because it's like when Bill Maher came out and said, Fauci can't tell me what to do. It's like Fauci said, do as you're told in November of 2020. Mm-hmm. And now he's coming out acting like, haha, I'm defiant. It's just like, dude, you're not convincing anybody, you know? So I'll tell you what'll happen. For one, the point of this segment was to point out that Joe owns the news cycle. He talks about with Jordan Peterson climate change. And all of a sudden, that's like the conversation people are having. It's remarkable because everyone knows he owns it. So moving forward, I think what's going to happen is with like Evangeline Lilly, these celebrities, they know what's popular. Ethan Klein, our good friend over at the H3 podcast, you see him coming out and mocking Joe Rogan over and over again. And it's just like, dude, like you're choosing the losing side of this. Freedom, free inquiry is winning. And all the smear campaigns and everything they want to do, it just doesn't work because what it comes down to is what people want is authenticity. Mm. The people who listen to Joe know he's not a scientist. They know he's not a doctor.
Yeah.
They know he's not the smartest guy in the world. And you like you can look at the comments and they're just like, he's just a guy. And that's what it was with Vice. In the late 2000s and the early 2010s, Vice was authentic. The way it was described was that Vice was like if your bar buddy went to Afghanistan and they'd be talking to you like a friend about what they experienced and telling a story as opposed to a guy in a suit being like, let me tell you as the authority. Mm-hmm. So that's what Joe's embodied. Regular dude having conversations with a bunch of crazy people asking questions. And I gotta be honest, Joe's not even particularly adversarial.
He's not, yeah.
Like when he had Josh Zepps on, I ranted about him quite a bit, who insinuated I was all right. Joe defended me, but still rather passively. And then he tweeted when people started making fun of him over his myocarditis segment with Josh Zepps, he said, I love the guy and I'm glad he was able to, you know, show me or whatever. He's still not particularly adversarial. So it's absurd to me that the media is going after him so hard when Joe had Sanjay Gupta on.
Yep. Yeah.
And defended Sanjay after the fact. When Sanjay wrote an article saying, I was scared Joe Rogan was going to jump the table and throttle my neck. Rake. When I brought that up, Joe was like, come on, he's just trying to be funny. And I'm like, but I wouldn't give him the benefit of the doubt. I think he genuinely was scared. I mean, the dude admitted he never had a 3-hour conversation with another human being.
That's like, crazy.
Yeah, what? Think, crazy. How is that possible?
Does he have a wife, right?
Has he gone to school?
I think he met like a one-on-one interview.
Oh, interview.
I think that was what he was implying. Yeah,
but hold on.
Benefit of the doubt here, yeah.
But I've probably thousands upon thousands of times I've had three-hour conversations with tons of different people.
You have.
I know, outside of this show.
Not Sanjay. But when it's not normal, though. Most people don't do that.
Oh, come on, dude.
I feel like it is normal.
To have a three-hour
one-on-one.
That's pretty normal. Yeah, that's pretty normal.
Dude,
yeah.
I'd be at my friend's house.
All the people here, everyone's like, it's totally normal, you guys.
Well, so do you think
we're all talkers? Well, people are talking.
We're in an hour chamber.
Hold on. Carrie thinks it's normal. Seamus thinks it's normal.
I think it's completely normal.
I don't even talk that much. I think it's normal.
Ian, do you think it's normal?
No.
But hold on. Like, you know, we come from very different backgrounds, all of us here.
Yeah.
So it may not be a great sampling, but my story is I'd be hanging out at my friend's house, you know, on like a Saturday evening or whatever. It would be me and like one or two other people, and we would talk for like 5 or 6 hours while like, you know, some music was playing in the background.
Right, but you're not listening the whole time. Like people will
chat,
and then they'll be like, huh? Or like you're zone out, and you'll be like looking at something while they're talking, or like there'll be times when
they're going at it, Ian, straight listening to each other for three hours. You are making up what I just said, but interpreting it.
You're saying for 5 hours.
We're literally sitting in this
backyard. Hung out with a group of friends. It's different.
A group of friends had two or three people. Yeah, we're sitting in the backyard, and we're talking about space and time and aliens, and we would just talk for hours.
I used to do that, too. Yeah. Taco Bell. We'd sit there for four hours.
Yeah.
Free refills.
At my friend's place, I would go to Wendy's, and I would buy, like, $30 worth of Wendy's and just get back. That was back with a dollar menu, so I'd get, like, 20-something burgers.
49 cents.
Joe Rogan and that inflation. Right. Damn.
Yeah, exactly. I couldn't believe.
17 years ago, and we'd be sitting there on my friend's couch, and it would be me and maybe one or one other person, and we would just be, like, I remember having conversations about how time could, what time is, and we're talking about gravity, just having the exact same kind of conversations that Joe would be having.
Yeah.
That was normal for me, and politics too.
Yeah.
I'd be talking about all this stuff. So for me, when he mentioned, like, I've never even had a conversation this long, I'm like, at some point in your life, at least once, you've never done that?
I mentioned this at home, I think it was last night, and I was like, this blew my mind. I could not believe that he hadn't had a conversation that long. But to get back to your point, I think that Joe Rogan and the Joe Rogan fight really highlights the difference between the elite and just a regular person. And the elite think that we need them to tell us what to do, and all we want is someone who's genuine, and they can't get it through their heads. They do not understand that, and the fight will never end because
and that is the actual threat to democracy. That is what the elite mindset is, the actual threat to democracy. Joe Rogan is the people.
Yeah.
He's the opposite of the threat to democracy. 100%. Like that's what I am so angry about, you know, the Washington Post motto, democracy dies in dark. Like, that is the most disgusting. That's an evil motto.
Think about every article they produce,
that they just did a big hit job on the Independent Women's Forum, which was full of lies. And I'm like, you actually, this elite institution, which had a very storied history, has become so corrupt that their claims, again, words don't matter.
Yeah.
If you're throwing that phrase around, you actually don't know what it means. It's the people.
Look at what the Washington Post does, what they say and what they do. They say, democracy dies in darkness.
We need
more darkness.
Yeah, exactly.
Bingo.
That's what they're doing.
I was going to say, they did a hit piece on you. They did a hit piece on a 16-year-old boy for no reason.
That wasn't even newsworthy.
Yeah, it wasn't even a story.
What was that all about?
The Covington
Nick Sandman.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Well, he got his due. We didn't get our payout.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
It's like having the Washington Post write about you is like slipping outside of a fancy restaurant. You're just like hoping, like, all right, this might be able to turn into a lawsuit for me.
Did they go too far? Are you guys considering suing them?
If we were, I couldn't tell you. But they basically went after an organization we have. So we have a membership group called the Independent Women's Network. And our policy director, Hadley, wrote a form letter, like just a suggestion of a letter you could write to your kid, your school, the kids, you know, if they're being forced to wear masks. Very polite letter, just kind of ideas on what to include in the letter. And the Washington Post takes it. And they infiltrated our group. Someone bought a fake membership and leaked it to the Washington Post. And, they're like, this, you know, evil Coke back group, because we get some money, I can't disclose how much, but we do get some money from the Coke Network, but we get money from a lot of other organizations, but they put it on the front page and they're like, they're trying to spread misinformation and, basically encourage, you know, extremism and violence at school boards and encourage people to to be riled up and tell moms to be, you know, demonic. And I'm obviously, you know, using flourish words, but that's basically what they were saying because of this very polite form letter. And actually the letter itself included studies, that explicitly, you know, very well-regarded studies about the efficacy and the problems with masks. The story didn't even address any of the studies. Mm-hmm. All they did was their hyperbole and just, it was really upsetting. But not surprising.
Well, yeah, they usually will address the mandate and not the actual medical substance. Science.
Yeah. No, but to the point earlier, we were talking about threat to democracy. So I wrote the piece recently for the New York Post, and I was looking at research about just how bigoted liberals are. So there was a study, a poll looking at, you know, I looked at many polls, but this one looked at college campuses and how bigoted Republican students were versus Democrat students. It found that 30% of Democrats and only 7% of Republicans said they would not work for someone who voted differently from them. Hmm. And also this polling was done by Axios and Generation Lab, which are not right-wing organizations. And they also said that only 5% of Republican college students said they wouldn't befriend someone from the opposite party versus 37% of Democrats. And then Republicans, 71% of Democrats said they would not date someone who was a Republican versus 31%.
They won't date them. Yeah. So sad. Oh, man. That's horrible. I think, well, it's also interesting. They're bigoted in other ways, too. There was a study which showed that white liberals were likely to dumb down their language when talking to black people, and white conservatives were not. Yeah.
That was really revealing.
But did it shock you at all?
No.
There was no part of me that read that and went, what? I can't believe this right now. Would they really do that? Mm-hmm.
This was a big red pill for, I can't remember who we were talking to. Was it Bhatia?
Baby, yeah.
I think she was saying that was the red pill moment for her when she read that and was like, if this is true, like that says something.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it says it in a dumbed down way.
It sure does.
It looks down on you. It thinks that you exist as a pawn for its political agenda.
Yikes, yeah.
Well, it's the city urban liberal types.
Yep, mm-hmm. Yep.
That's right.
Yeah. City urban.
I sense a t-shirt coming out.
Yeah.
Hey, that's a good one. Hey,
is that why women are more likely to be a part of it?
What?
CULT, we were just talking. Women are more likely to end up in cults. Yeah.
So we'll make women shirts? Women, yeah. Are you saying we should make a t-shirt for women?
That's not what I said. I was a quick little off-the-cuff joke. Didn't land.
Right.
Had to explain it. Never pitched a shirt.
I'm assuming the people who do the merch for TimCast are listening.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, always. Yeah.
So, hey, we'll do city urban liberal types. That's a good shirt,
That is a
right?
really good shirt.
I love it.
Let's make it.
I love it.
All right, let's read Super Chats. If you haven't already, smash the like button. Or as I posted in the chat, smush the like button.
Oh, smush.
And send in those Super Chats. We'll try and read what we can. Go to TimCast.com. Become a member. We're going to have a members-only podcast up around 11 or so p.m. uncensored at TimCast.com. All right, let's read what we got here. I am says, Ian, the Federal Reserve speaks of making their own crypto, and now the Biden admin is using the national security apparatus to attack them. Why is that? Cryptos, that is.
Interesting.
You hear that? They're going to regulate it? They want to regulate it?
Yeah.
I have heard that. Central bank crypto. I think that is it going to be done? It might even not be done on a blockchain. So although they call it crypto, it's not the same thing. You can have a crypto that's not on a blockchain and not secured.
What's it going to be? It's going to be called Warcoin. And every single time we go to war with another country, it's just going to skyrocket.
Seamus, can you read this next super chat right here?
Hold on. Tim, here is some money to get Seamus an Ireland flag, a pot of gold, and a St. Joseph statue to go behind his wall from one Irish light to another. I think that's beautiful. Frankly, if we could get like a papal flag behind me, I would love it. That would be perfect.
What did St. Joseph do?
St. Joseph was the
Mother
husband
of
the Blessed Virgin Mary.
Oh, that's Joe?
St. Joseph.
Joe.
Yeah.
Shout out to
him. He was the foster father of Jesus
just
Christ.
Just your average right. Joe. Is that where that
not
comes
your
from?
Average Joe, absolutely.
I hear
he was the second
awesome,
holiest of all the
dude.
Saints. Oh, he is.
He like adopted Jesus, right?
Yeah. Well, he was that's the foster father. Yeah, foster
let's,
father.
But awesome. Let's read some more. What's it says? Visick says, good job, Seamus, getting Tim Pool as a guest on your show.
Thank you. I'm Shimcast right? IRL.
You're welcome.
But and I've gotten Tim on my show. I've done Tim's show plenty of time, Timmy Toons. Where he does these political cartoons. And
they're pretty good.
Yeah, every now and again, I'll come and voice Dr. Fauci for him.
So. I like the Jordan Peterson, though.
Thank you so much.
Seamus, it is a life accomplishment of mine to have a voice acting credit For those that don't know, I am the voice of Dr. Fauci on Freedom Tunes.
On IMDb.
People never know. People never know. I'll mention so that you're the voice of Dr. Fauci. Like, wait, really?
Wait, I'm
like,
can we hear it?
You don't need to be wearing two masks.
It was, dude, we probably improv'd like
it's a way gruffer version of his actual voice.
Yeah, well also like,
I love it. Spot on.
I put a little slate at the end of every video that lists donors and also lists credits. So Tim gets listed in the credits. Yay. And you actually have Internet Movie Database, IMDb, right? Yeah, credits. For your Dr.
Do you get
Fauci.
Royalties every time it's played?
Shit, that's actually how he's funding this. He gets royalties from Freedom Tunes.
That's actually a bit we were going to do for the vlog, where it's like, the joke is that Seamus, the royalties from Freedom Tunes are what fund everything, and everything, it's like we're just trying to maintain an image. We should do that. That'd be funny.
We absolutely should. Dude, it's so funny, because like, I've seen one or two comments on the vlogs, they're like, I wonder if like, Seamus and Chris are just joking, or if they really do those things. It was like, this is, I thought it was obvious that we were like doing a bit. I couldn't have.
All right, let's read some more. We got to, Aiden says, Tim, you should have on Maxime Bernier on the show. Leader of the People's Party of Canada. Trucks just passed my house today. Also, Carrie, you look beautiful.
Well,
he said no.
Yeah. So Maxime, when I asked him, was doing like a really hardcore, campaign. So he's too busy, but we can try again.
Well, I mean,
it'd be fun, yeah.
Keep in mind that doing a show like this is good for your campaign, bro.
It's true.
Well,
too.
Look.
It's just a matter of time.
I don't like the, like, people are busy people, you know? If they have time for us and they want to do us a favor and come on, like, I appreciate it. We don't pay guests to come out. We cover their costs and everything.
They don't.
We don't pay. Yeah, Seamus, actually, we never paid his costs. We just, no, you know, we tricked
him. They wouldn't pay my costs, no.
What do you, actually, we pay Seamus the most.
I think it's Dan Crenshaw's about to start a podcast, I think. Is that right?
Oh, I don't know.
What do you guys think about, like, every congressperson having their own podcast?
Probably be a good thing.
I don't want to hear anything more from any of those people.
Well, you get to listen at your own leisure,
I guess.
True, too.
I think they should, man. I want to hear more from them. And the president.
Ted Cruz does one
like,
with
them. You think, how many people are like,
left the deadpan.
Hold on. How many people who work in politics, how many people who are actual elected representatives have like anything remotely interesting to say ever?
Trey Gowdy did.
3%.
Every now and again, some of them.
Rand Paul does.
Yeah. Every now and again, in Ron Thomas Paul. Massey. Oh my goodness.
Rand have
but I'm saying it's very uncommon. It's very uncommon. But then again, if the market was just saturated with a bunch of elected leaders having podcasts, we would see which ones rose
Donald
to
Trump.
The top.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That'd be
a good one. Should, man.
If Donald Trump had a podcast, it would be like 6 hours a day.
It would be
6 hours.
Huge.
He would just, because he just would turn the mic on and start talking to everyone. Like,
2.3
this is who I would
instantly.
Call fat today if I was on Twitter. Here's the list. It's 12. It's going to take about a half hour to get through this, okay? None of these people, all of these people drink Diet Coke.
For sure.
All right, let's read some more. What do we got here? Anthony says, why don't the trucker protests, California, New York, and all these states that are enforcing mask mandate and vaccine mandates? Yeah, where's the U.S. trucker protest? I suppose after they do the convoy in Canada, they should keep it going.
But they haven't specifically targeted truckers. It was, you know, blanket mandate
thing, right? Yeah.
In America. Like, they haven't gone after truckers.
Oh, right.
Yeah, isn't that the problem?
Well, the issue now is that it's the border.
Yeah.
If you want to cross the border, you got to be vaccinated. And unvaccinated Americans can't even enter Canada. But unvaccinated Canadians have to quarantine after entering. So it's jammed up traffic in both directions. I don't know if that's the sole reason for the protest. It's a big reason. All right, let's see. We got just a cook named Josh. Says, hey, Tim, love your show, as I've made it a daily routine every day. Yet as a Canadian, thank you for making news of the Freedom Convoy 2022. As the authoritarian government censors us, we are not going to stop. Like and share.
Yes.
Tell everybody about the story, man. There was also another protest, I think people confused, where truckers were concerned about icy conditions.
Mm.
It actually happened. And some people are suggesting it was a psyop. Because what happens is, when this trucker convoy breaks, you know, comes out, right? I heard reports that, like, only some trucks are blocking the borders and it's no big deal. Then you actually look at the social media and it's like hundreds of truckers are starting this thing. Then all of a sudden there's a protest where it's like truckers engage in, you know, massive political action. And I clicked it and it was like, seven trucks with signs saying, you know, fix the icy conditions. And then I was like, wait, what is?
Oh, they spun up another protest to diffuse from the protest.
So the conspiracy theory
is to a media manipulation
trick people
tactic.
Into thinking there's no real big 50,000 trucker protest. You stage a small one then tell everyone, oh, that trucker protest you heard about, there it is, those seven trucks. Yep, they are upset about icy conditions.
Your search optimization results.
Yep. I mean, I know icy conditions are dangerous, but I've never heard of a protest about icy conditions.
This might have to do with that.
That just seems insane. Like, what?
What do we want? More salt!
That trucker that was like, remember like a couple months ago, the trucker was coming down the hill and hit bunch of people.
Oh,
so it might have something to do with that.
But I thought that was more his brakes.
I think it was.
Well, he was supposed to take, they had that off-ramp thing for runaway trucks. He was supposed to go through, he didn't.
And they blamed him. Like, they came down with him on 100 years in prison or something.
There was a good argument from the truckers.
But was it icy? I don't think it was icy.
No, but they might be like, we're not driving if you're going to blame us for accidents.
The argument was that if he's treating, if you're holding a powerful device, be it a gun or a truck, you're responsible for what happens. So if you crash it, that's his fault. He should have engaged in proper safety protocols.
Well, did you hear that's what they're trying to do in Milwaukee? They're actually, I cannot believe, well, it's liberal, so I can believe it.
Yeah.
The Milwaukee City Council, I kid you not, wants to sue the two most popular, the makers of the two most popular cars in the area that are getting hijacked because there are too many carjackings now in the city of Milwaukee. And so they want to sue them for making the cars too easy to hijack.
That's like she shouldn't have worn that walking down the
street. That's exactly what I said. I wrote a piece about this, and I said this is the equivalent of victim shaming and saying that the rape victim deserved it because she was wearing a skirt or a blouse.
They want these car companies to make uglier cars?
They want them to make them easier to hide or harder to hijack.
Interesting. Not harder to want to hijack.
Right.
Not uglier.
More secure.
I just want to mention one more thing here about this trucker shortage. As we were mentioning earlier in the podcast, 20% of truckers who cross the border, as many as 20%, are unvaccinated. We sort of stopped talking about this in general. It was a story a few months ago, but there is still a trucker shortage.
Yep.
So to do this right now, again, just to really hit home the absurdity of this, it's insane. Can you believe it? It's actually ridiculous.
People don't know this, but saying the word absurd is the hypnotic command to trigger Seamus becoming Jordan Peterson.
It's true. Yeah. Yep.
Absurd. Let's read some more.
What?
Trash Panda says, can't think of a better birthday present for me today than seeing my fellow trucker spit in the eye of tyrants.
Yes, happy birthday.
Happy birthday Absolutely. To you.
Happy birthday. Keep on trucking.
All right. Bill Lemon says, can we have a cage match between Seamus and Luke? Last man standing stays in the show permanently.
Oh, snap.
So this is the thing. Luke and I have interacted around the house a number of times. I'm always very kind and gracious to him. He's got a chip on his shoulder. He's always yelling at me, cussing at me. You can see it on the vlog.
People don't realize this, but Ireland and Poland have beef.
No, it's historical. No, I mean, in all honesty, Luke is someone who I really like, whose work I like very much. And Tim had to put me in this unfortunate position of being pitted against him. And it's sad because, to be honest, I will say this. I really admire the Polish, especially Poland as a country. Very good Catholic.
If you were going
to
wrestle
the Pope that helped defeat
John Paul II.
Yeah. Polish.
Yeah.
The Pope that knew how to pope.
Yeah.
Would you wrestle Luke on land or in like a foot of water?
I never said I wouldn't wrestle him. I'd wrestle Luke anywhere.
Yeah. Underwater. Yeah. Underwater would be
a water.
I would be upset about it. But like, of course I would do it.
Yeah.
Would you do it if he identified as a female? Because then you'd be attacking a female.
No, because he wouldn't actually be a female. You know?
So you would still wrestle him?
I would still wrestle him. See, even you just said him because you know.
Check it out. Damien says, Tim, I got a mobile LED billboard. As of tonight, I have both breaking news on it. First, about the truckers. Second, is about the man that got denied the heart transplant.
Oh.
We should buy some billboards.
Yes, we should. This man
what
has
should
a
we
good
do?
Idea.
Let's do a billboard contest.
Shimcast.
No, we should do a billboard.
C-U-L-T.
Yeah.
Oh.
So, that's good.
Here?
And don't move here if you're a...
No, we'll just... do it and we'll put it, you know, it's gonna be really funny. We think we're being all smart and edgy, like haha cult, and then it becomes like an actual popular thing, like how Monopoly did.
Yeah.
Like, you know, Monopoly was originally made to make fun of capitalism.
Yeah. Dude, we could get one of those.
Really? I did not know that.
No, like, let's buy a real billboard. I'm saying, like, actually get Sunset Boulevard.
The problem is they're not worth it anymore. We noticed this with Mines when we were doing market research, is like Super Bowl ads, billboards, they were so expensive and the return was so low relative to like Facebook ads.
Yep.
So if you really want to hit a target audience, you go to the internet.
Let's buy Facebook ads.
Because then there's click-throughs.
That's a great idea.
What's something we can do with Facebook ads that would just be?
We have a marketing guy who's great. So.
Well, I don't mean marketing. I don't care if people learn who we are necessarily. I'm saying just to like you know, spit in the eye of tyrants.
Well, I'm good at making cartoons, and that's cartoons true. Upset tyrants sometimes. So.
Did you ever hear the story about that guy who used Facebook's targeted advertising to freak out his roommate?
No.
Because Facebook used to allow you to directly target people based on email addresses.
Oh, really?
So what he did was he advertised to only one email address, which was his roommate, and he would make ads that said things like, "Did you forget to do the dishes? Your roommate could be angry." And then his roommate would be like, "What is going on?"
Yeah, that's actually amazing.
Brilliant.
Yep. Oh, I love that.
I don't think they allow that anymore, though.
Oh, it's too bad.
That's a shame.
Now it's just like
torture, psychological torture.
Yeah.
Maybe they do. Maybe they still allow it. I don't know. It was a funny
they
story.
They should.
That is funny.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nevermore says drink. Tim said occupy. I say occupy very often?
I don't know. Maybe.
I mean, it occupies some of your time. Yeah.
It occupies Wall Street.
You said Occupy Wall Street.
You didn't
earlier.
Say Wall Street.
You said Occupy. You were talking about the protesters.
I know. I said it one time.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
So it's funny when people are like, if Tim says a certain phrase, drink, and I'm like, it's funny because there'll be like a week where I'll say something like at the end of the day a lot.
It's true.
And then everyone for like a year will be like, Tim says at the end of the day a lot. And I'm like, that's like one week where it was in my mind and I don't say that
You
anymore.
Said something, you said to be honest several times.
I did. Yeah, that's one
and
of
I'm
my
like,
fillers.
I'm like,
why'd you point it out? They're going to know now.
Okay.
Know.
Drink,
that was a
drink,
little, that was
drink,
a little too honest.
Drink, drink. No, the reason why honest. Is because I have a friend who would say, whenever somebody says that, you're like, okay, was everything else a lie? So,
yeah,
you're,
exactly.
So like you're now caveating
now you're
what you're
out.
Saying.
Now you're
it's
out.
True.
Now
being honest. Does that mean everything else is a lie?
Yes.
Why are you doing this to me? Why are you doing
I'm
this? Now they're going to know.
You know what? I'm a truth teller.
Tell the truth, Seamus.
To be honest.
All right. We got this from Nick. He says, my parents are what I call Fox News Republicans. I've been trying to get them to listen to you, Tim. I showed them a 5-minute clip and they said they agreed with what you said. Keep up the great work.
Cool.
So we were talking about this the other day. Every so often, the segment I do at 4 p.m., Tucker Carlson will then do on his nightly show. I don't do the entirety of his show because he does, you know, an hour or whatever. But like my, you know, 10-minute, you know, segment or whatever, which it stretches out for a variety of reasons, he would talk about that in his. And I think that has a lot to do with, like the cultural zeitgeist that in this political space, a conversation emerges that everyone sees and starts talking about. You know what I mean? So.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I told you not to do that segment about the M&Ms, but you still did it, and then we had Tucker Carlson.
That was a weird expression on your face when you said that. You were like,
"This is great." I was like, "I'm gonna make fun of
Seamus." Did
Tim's gonna get this?
Seamus made fun of Tucker Carlson, and Lou got really mad.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, that's so right. Because here's the thing: people know, generally speaking, I'm a fan of Tucker Carlson. To be honest, I enjoy his work, honestly, but I wasn't going to not make fun of him for the M&M segment, so I just kept doing this impression of him, and everyone was cracking up except for Luke. Luke was like, you know what? He made a mistake. Let him be.
But I think he was mostly joking,
No,
too.
He was mostly joking. He was mostly joking.
It was a dumb segment. Yeah. Did you guys see the M&M segment?
It's a great segment.
He's like, why aren't M&Ms attractive to me anymore?
Yeah, that was good.
He's complaining because the green M&M was in high stilettos,
and
now
there were boots. They were like go-go boots, like thigh high sexy boots, like boots
the
that I would want to wear. What is wrong with being sexy? Like, what is wrong with being feminine? What is wrong with that? I don't get it.
Sure, but I just
they want us to be androgynous.
We're talking about an M&M. Like,
I think it's very weird. Yeah,
like especially you ever see that meme where it's like it's like never forget what they took from you, and it's Lola Bunny from the 90s and Lola Bunny from the new one.
That's true.
I took her boobs away. I'm like, yo, I'm not, I've never been concerned. But maybe there are furries or some people who are like, you know, that's actually a meme too.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, the thing is, I just never really thought about it. I never thought about her having those boots until someone said something about it. But now I'm angry that they took them away.
I think the bit you should do, Seamus, is that you should go the other direction with it and make the candy 10 times as sexy.
Absolutely not. No. That is disgusting. Well, no, but I always thought it was
like
weird.
Big,
yeah, why
like
are they?
Big
they didn't
I always thought it was weird.
Put some curves.
I thought it was very weird that when it came to the mascots, Eminem decided one of the M&Ms needed to have like some version of sex appeal. That was always a strange thing. Yeah. It's like they're M&Ms.
Who are they appealing to?
It's because we just have this absurd. And like, I'm not sure. I guess the best thing you could say in terms
feminine.
Of giving them the benefit of the doubt is that they're sort of parodying like a stereotype with this M&M of like, this is what, you
it's
know, there's always
like
sort of that token.
Having the beautiful woman character. Smoking the cigarette in the commercial, and it's like trying to target people, make them feel more attractive when they smoke.
Let's read some more super chats. We got a good one here from Nova Zero. He says, those of us Aussies who know you use a VPN, I turn it off for the super chat so you know where I am. But likewise, you don't know us. Avi isn't the only one fighting here. Aussie Cossack and friendly Geordies. We exist, you know. Yes, absolutely. I'm familiar with Avi, principally. I know there's a lot of other people there. I have some friends in a couple different cities. I talked to them about what's going on. There's obviously people organizing protests and pushing back. I did not mean to suggest that literally no Australian person is protesting. I'm just saying that, you know, when Ian pointed out Quillette under duress, I can immediately point to Avi, who I'm familiar with for a variety of reasons.
Right.
And you guys as well. So you know, good luck and fight the good fight. And I hope Australia learns its lesson and backs off the insanity. Mm-hmm. All right. Adrian Curry says, Marxism is like the Hallmark Channel. It's a lie women get addicted to because it makes them feel good.
Interesting.
The Hallmark like Channel. That. Hilarious.
It does seem.
And it makes you
I
think
do
men
like
are
the Hallmark
evil.
Channel. Yeah. No.
And it makes you think men are
no,
evil.
Cult,
so many
cult.
Hallmark movies.
No, it says cult men are evil.
Yes, exactly.
Urban cult. Men are evil. That's yeah. awesome. You got to move to the country and find a good family-oriented man.
You know what? You turned me around on this.
Yeah.
All right, Z says, you know I'm an atheist, but after hearing that Mormon comment, I think I'm going to be a Mormon, LOL. Which one was that, though? Was that the calling it a cult or something?
I think it's that there's more
oh,
women.
Oh, the polygamy.
Maybe?
Yeah,
oh.
Yeah, okay, yeah. Makes sense.
I think they've done away with that, have they?
Wasn't
not,
it?
No?
Well, actually, no, exactly, on paper. They do believe in the afterlife. So the mainstream McChurch, as I like to say, the Mitt Romney church, the big one, they do believe in polygamy in the afterlife. Like, but they believe the structure of heaven is polygamous.
Aren't they teetotalers?
Oh.
Oh,
yeah. No coffee,
no booze?
No tea?
No.
So they're
no
monogamous
booze.
In life?
No booze.
Yeah, so I think it was like Family Guy or some show where they were like, wait, when you're a Mormon, you can have multiple wives? Like, yes. And they're like, sign me up. And then they were like, wait, no beer. And they ran away.
is it that they're
but in the afterlife, you don't need booze, right? I mean, yeah. Everyone's
they,
happy. Yeah.
Are they monogamous in life? And then when they die, they think they have a bunch of wives?
Well, actually, on Earth, you can technically be sealed to multiple women, usually in matters of death or divorce. So, for an example, my Aunt Charlotte was gorgeous. She was Miss USA. She was Miss Utah USA. She was stunning. I don't want to say too – I will hold my tongue about her ex-husband, but basically, she put on some weight, and then he divorced her and married a younger, you know, skinnier woman. They had 8 children together, and because they believe you need to be married in order to go to the highest level of heaven, she passed away, God rest her soul. She never found another husband to marry, so technically, according to Mormon doctrine, because he was still sealed to her, he will get both wives in the afterlife.
Oh,
wow, that's kind of
wow.
Yeah,
weird.
It's kind of that really angered me. It really upset me.
Understandably.
Yeah. I mean,
because
I'm like, it's part of why I left Mormonism. I'm like, this is literally the definition of hell to me. Like, how is this heaven?
So bad,
this was designed out of the brain of a human male.
Yeah, this sounds like. Sure does.
Let's read some more here. We got Yellow Cafe says, the largest cult in the world is led by Jared Leto. He's tattooing his followers' bodies. He and his followers say the phrase, yes, this is a cult, to downplay that it's a cult. He has many allegations against him for having adult activities with underage individuals. Please look into this. Those are bold accusations. I'm not familiar with that.
Somebody sent us a thing about this.
Really?
Yeah, thing is interesting.
But Jared Leto plays that Morbius guy.
Yeah, he sings that song. Joker. Those songs.
Oh, right.
He's a Joker. Yeah.
All right, let's see.
30 Seconds to Mars.
Yes.
Zeknik says, Seamus, are you courting Michaela Peterson after your interview with her and her father? A lot of flirt vibes in that interview.
No, I didn't think I was flirting at all.
You were
I
mean, she's, all
over. Well, hold on. Having a conversation.
Hold on.
We're having a friendly conversation.
I don't know if
everybody knows, Seamus, women marry their fathers. And when you go to Michaela, doing
about?
That voice,
oh my gosh.
We
just
know what you're trying to do.
No.
It's a great works. Video. Seamus did a video on Michaela. I think it's on Michaela's channel. And Jordan made a special appearance, and Seamus did the voice to his face.
Cool.
check it out.
That's
check it
amazing.
Out. It's hilarious.
It was good.
That's awesome.
Wait, yeah. you did Jordan Peterson's voice to Jordan?
Oh, yeah, to his face. It was great. It was a good experience. I didn't think I was going to have to, but then I was. So she
can I have your autograph?
Yeah, absolutely. So she invited me to do her podcast, which was great. And so I was on, and I did not expect him to be there, and she surprised me with him. She surprised me with Jordan Peterson being there, and it blew my mind. It really awesome. Did.
Okay, she likes you. What kind of?
She likes you, Shay.
Well, she loves you.
I like you too.
Are you kidding me?
Isn't she married?
She is.
Okay, never mind this.
Sorry. Divorced now.
Oh, really?
Or announced divorce.
Oh, he broke up the marriage.
Yeah.
Stop it. Never. The best part of the interview was when Jordan got confused about who he was.
He's like, wait, who am I?
Who's talking?
Looking in a mirror right now. Stay away from me.
He punched his computer screen.
All right. Wade Mikunda says, Tim as Fauci arguing with Seamus as Jordan Peterson. Go.
Well, here's the thing. It's like if you – here's the deal.
Put on your mask, Jordan.
No. I got vaccinated.
You're getting the droplets.
You leave me alone. I got vaccinated.
Oh, man. Maybe that should be
I love it. This should be ongoing.
I'm not as good as Seamus at doing the voices. Like, when we do this normally, I have to, like, try and get into character.
Anthony Fauci, Jordan Peterson in a paleontology museum trying to get out.
Oh, gosh.
5 minutes until closing time.
Oh, no. Did you used to do improv? No,
that's yeah, improv. Theater, yeah, that's what you do in improv. Yeah,
that's awesome.
No, so when I do the voices, usually
the situation.
The only way it really works, especially the long ones, is that Seamus tells me how to say these things. Mm-hmm. For real, though. So, like, Seamus gave me a script once, and I can read it as Fauci, but to get the actual thing right, I need him, you know.
Motivation.
Otherwise, I'd be
What's my motivation?
No, it's just, like, you can say things like, get out of my store. Get out of my store. Get out of my store. You know what I mean?
Get out of
like
my
a,
store.
Like a line right. reading.
A vocal coach.
So exactly. line readings help
it's,
it, you?
No, it's just
I'm a good director.
So because...
more feeling.
Depending on how the other sentences are going to be said, it could be a question, it could be a response, it could be angry, it could be sad. I can't see those things on paper. So in order to actually have like an argument, do it.
So are you the equivalent of colorblind but with words?
Well, no. I mean, Seamus is good at the improv and just doing these voices. I can do a voice, but without something to play off of. You know what I mean? So like... So typically when people are like, hey, can you do this person's voice? I'm like, I have to actually hear them say it and I can impersonate it. Mm-hmm. Seamus, for some reason, can just literally make up a sentence that sounds like Jordan Peterson from, you know, right away.
Yeah, there's something strange about my brain, but I know that when Tim and I will record, I'll be like, Tim, he'll give me a read and I'll go, Tim, you're angry. People aren't taking their vaccines. They won't wear their masks. You've studied this your whole
life. You're getting your droplets all over me.
And then I go, you nailed it. You got it. I felt the emotion in that.
That was a fun one. The one where the guy's breaking up with Fauci.
Yeah.
And then Fauci cries. And I went,
I put that for my donors on Patreon, like the entire 20-minute recording session. People were dying when they watched it. They thought it was hilarious.
It's so hilarious, dude. Table reads for voice acting is just always
so
hilarious.
So much fun.
Yeah, Seamus and I did a really disgusting, improv.
We did some very funny ones. There was one disgusting one. I don't even want to get into
it's,
detail.
I'll just explain
it. I can't see the light. No, don't even explain. It will never see the light of day. There's, I can't.
It's so bad. It's basically, Fauci is in Los Angeles.
Tim, don't do this. Don't even explain this. Don't
come on.
Do this.
What do you mean? It's a common joke. It's a meme.
Yeah, that's fair.
So it's Fauci's in LA and someone's trying to get work and he's like, if you want to work in this town, and he's basically, you know, Harvey. You know.
That's true.
No, but they, you gotta get your vaccination.
Yes. That's right. Yeah. That's a tame description of the improv. So fair.
Seamus was like, "This is not acceptable. YouTube would ban us instantly." Yep.
I thought you were a good Catholic.
I was. I know. That's why. I was like, Tim, I can't make this. The whole time I was like, Tim, we're not doing that. Like, we are not doing that.
Like, I was like, Seamus, where's the edgy humor?
Did you go to the confession after that?
No. Well, I didn't think I did anything wrong.
You talked to your priest?
I do talk to my priest, but I didn't think I did anything wrong in that instance. I kept telling Tim not to.
Do you do confession a lot? Do you do like every week or something?
I try to. So when I'm at my home base and I'm, you know, on a decent schedule, I try to go at least once a week.
Is that normal for a Catholic to go every week?
That's a good question.
Do you go before you take communion to reset button?
That's a question. Yeah, so you need to be in a state of grace before you have the Eucharist. And so if I'm not in a state of grace, I'll have to go to confession first. But it's not necessarily required that you go to confession before every time you have the
state
Eucharist.
State of grace, like meditate, like into a calm state, kind of?
It's a good question. So basically, in Scripture, there's a delineation between the kind of sin that leads unto death specifically that are listed, like drunkards, idolaters, etc., will not inherit the kingdom of heaven. And so we refer to those and things under that category, basically any grave violation of the Ten Commandments, as a mortal sin, because that destroys your relationship with God. And then you need to be restored to a relationship with God, because as it's mentioned in Scripture, Christ gave the apostles the ability to forgive and retain sin. And so we believe that that was passed on through apostolic succession to modern day priests.
But
so,
where in the Bible did Jesus ask any confession when he gave them the bread and wine? at the Last Supper, because I don't recall him doing that, and I'm pretty sure that Judas was not in a state of grace.
Yeah, no, so that's an interesting question. It's been argued by some.
Sorry, Tim's
yeah,
saying
this is a whole big argument, but the point we'll I want to make
later.
Is that yeah,
Protestants well, rule.
But I can't, yeah. but I can't let that stand. But I can't let that stand. I'll also say that.
Sorry, we're done. We're canceled.
We should do this in the after show about this.
About
after
this?
Show.
Well, we can talk. Yeah, so. But
that means you got to join.
But we
y'all,
do
y'all got to subscribe.
Yeah, because the thing is, so I just want to mention this. In scripture, Paul does say, you eat and drink condemnation upon yourself if you receive unworthily.
Mm. Corto Maltese says, I've been following you for years now, but if this is just going to turn into Jesus cast, count me out. I come here for the news, not to hear about Christianity.
Well, define Christianity. Well, there's organized religion, then there's living like Christ, and you can do that without adhering to religion.
Exactly.
I absolutely love talking about religion. We've done several members only podcasts where we went like really long talking about a bunch of stuff. Mm-hmm. But I will say, you know, try to, if it goes too much into it, we'll try and steer it back into news. I don't want to. But
I think Jainism.
I think it's basically just because we have two, you know, religious individuals on the show today.
Yeah.
It comes up.
And also, like, when you're religious, your religion is baked into your worldview, so it's going to come up. I mean, you're just going to end up analyzing things through that lens. It's not as if I sit here and go, I want to force the conversation in this direction. It's just the way my brain works is when this topic goes up, related to my worldview and the prism through which I see.
Also, the United States was founded primarily by Judeo-Christians, so this is a podcast about America for Americans. Mm-hmm. I think that there are a lot of people who are like our viewer here who are secular, but there are a lot of Christians, and I think the beauty of a cosmopolitan society is that you can have all voices.
We don't talk about religion all that often, to be honest, but
we do have
I got to read super chats. Can't handle any discussion
of it. We're going to read some more super chats. It's very important. Anorak says, as a furry, I can confirm the fandom was devastated by the Lola Bunny change. Made me avoid social media for a month to stay away from the drama.
Wow.
That's actually kind of crazy.
I got a message from someone who was like, you know what? I identify as a furry. I want to thank you guys for kind of like just talking about the whole furry thing as kind of like a role play and not some weird, you know, bizarre getting your six-year-old a sex change operation or something. And so shout out to all you furries out there. And role playing is cool. You can do it constructively.
Yeah, furries have a really bad rap. You know what I mean? But we've had some people who have chimed in and talked about being a furry and, you know, have given us consistent super chats. Pretty sure people are just people in the middle.
Yeah, I was an actor for years. I mean, people do it for a living.
All right, what is this? Kevin Grip says, Crenshaw, big disappointment, bait and switch. Yeah, what do you guys think about Crenshaw?
When I first saw him, I loved him because of his willingness to listen. I think the thing I love about him is he's a good listener. Although I was thinking about this the other night, very open-minded. The problem with being open-minded is that you're more susceptible to being co-opted. So if he's there in the swamp and he's got people swirling around his mind, I'm afraid that he may be being pulled in directions.
We are going to have Dan Crench on the show at some point soon.
Yep.
Where I'm excited to have that conversation. There's been a lot of really he's had a lot of really bad internet press, like viral videos and stuff. I mean by that, and I think it's gonna be interesting to break down these questions and these stories and ask him about his worldview and what he hopes to accomplish. There was a lot of hope for him. Early on, people were really excited for Dan. Now it seems like a lot of the stuff coming out is very anti Dan Crenshaw.
He said that he thought Congress people should get paid more, and I was like, okay, he's famous. The famous Congress people get flown around. They go to events. They get taken around. They need to pay for that. $175K is not enough in a year to fly to Dallas and Fort Worth and all these. So then I'm like, so should we pay our famous Congress people more money? No, that's a bad precedent because then they're going to be tweeting up storms to get more famous, to get more money. So like, but I understand that you need more money when you're higher profile to get around.
We do plan on having him on very soon. We don't announce dates or anything just because in the event someone cancels, we don't want to get anyone's hopes up. But Luke will be coming back for this, and we're going to have a very serious political discussion, foreign policy, domestic policy. So I think it'll be good. And I think, you know, if people, whatever they think about him, they're going to hear a lot more from him, and, you know, they can use that to either solidify or counter their opinions on him. But we'll see. We'll see how it happens, how it goes down. So if you haven't already, smash the like button, subscribe to this channel, share the show with your friends. Go to timcast.com, become a member, because we are going to have a members-only segment coming up for you around 11 p.m. Don't forget to follow the show at TimCastIRL on Instagram and everywhere else. You can follow me at TimCast on Twitter, Instagram, Gab, Getter, etc. Carrie, do you want to shout anything out?
Yeah, nice to meet everybody. I'll see you in the after party show. And if you want to check out what we're doing at IWF.org, we are the counter to the feminist lies. And we have a community called the Independent Women's Network where we bring women, and we love men. We are a women's group that loves men. Imagine that. So, Independent Women's Network, we'd love to have you be part of our community. We have live chats. We have message boards. We have letters to send to your school board about masking policies, things like that. We will see you there.
And what's your Twitter? You got Twitter too.
Oh yeah, I'm on Twitter. Yeah, I'm Twitter, Getter, Instagram, Facebook, at Carrie Sheffield, except for Instagram, which is Sheffield Carrie. Sorry to the other one. She reversed the name and got it before I did.
I'm Seamus Coughlin, and I have a YouTube channel called Freedom Tunes. If you guys want to check that out, head on over there, subscribe. We just released a cartoon today about this insane policy of putting masks on children, which a lot of schools have. So check that out. Like, share, subscribe, spread it around. I think it's important for people on our side of the aisle to kind of try to build culture is the way Tim puts it, but just create content that isn't just a discussion of politics, but which is an actual sort of lampooning of it. And yeah, check me out there.
Shout out to all you Muslims, Christians, Jews, Hindus, Buddhists, Jainists.
Simulists.
Zoroastrists.
Also nuns, N-O-N-E-S.
All you nuns out
all
there.
All you nuns, atheists.
Love you.
Agnostics.
Shout out to all the agnostics up in this.
We love everyone.
And the flat earthers.
Yeah.
And the hollow earthers.
If you believe
and
in flat earth.
Hollow earthers.
Shout out.
In the flat simulation are people who believe in a simulation and the earth is flat and it's hollow. The
hollow simulation.
Hollow simulism.
Hey, follow me, IanCrossland.net. I'll catch you later.
Thank you guys very much for tuning in. I suspect tonight's after show will be fun, so you guys should go join up at timcast.com. Thank you all so much for tuning in. You guys may follow me on Twitter and at Minds at Sour Patch Lids.
We will see you all over at timcast.com for the members segment. Thanks for hanging out.
Bye, guys.